Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is special coverage of Hurricane Sandy on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. I'm Brian Lehrer. We are preempting the BBC NewsHour and the Takeaway to bring you continuing coverage. Some of what we know right now, the storm is currently strengthening, heading our way, and is already beginning to swamp beaches on Long Island and the Jersey Shore. We'll get reports from around our area, Freeport, Manasquan, Spring Lake, among the places being very hard hit. Many people have evacuated. Some people have not. We'll hear from some of them. The floor of the stock exchanges, as I mentioned before the news, are closed, and the NYSE has canceled its plan to allow electronic trading. Reportedly, they came to fear how some traders could take advantage of the situation. Ha, ha, ha. They'd never do that, would they? And listeners, we need you to help report this story. Call up or post to our website with what's happening on your block or in your area, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. You can also post to our social media feeds at Brian Lehrer on Twitter or Brian Lehrer WNYC on Facebook. And again, on the air, we'll take your calls, 212-433-WNYC. It'll definitely help people to hear your very local reports of what's happening. 212-433-9692. What's happening with water levels? What's happening with cars and with trees? And with anything else you can see or hear to report, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We especially want to hear from people along the Jersey Shore, along the South Shore of Long Island, the Long Island Sound in Connecticut. But from anywhere, if there's something going on to report, 212-433-WNYC. For those of you living in evacuation zones, did you evacuate? 212-433-9692. If so, how did you prepare your home for your time away? What did you take with you or leave behind? Where did you go? Where are you now? If you decided to stay put, ye of little faith in the judgment of the authorities, call up and tell us what it's like and how you are preparing to hunker down and ride this out. 212-433-WNYC. And again, we'll also collect your reports online at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or on our social media feeds at Brian Lehrer on Twitter or Brian Lehrer WNYC on Facebook. WNYC's Richard Hake is with me here in the studio, as is David First from New Jersey Public Radio. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Brian.
Good morning.
Richard, what you got?
Well, I'm just looking at the National Weather Service hourly information from Central Park, and winds are gusting up to 37 miles per hour. This as these outer bands start reaching the New York City area. Light rain reported throughout the area. Winds are gusting up to 47 miles per hour at Kennedy, 49 right now at Newark Airport. This could go much higher as the day progresses. The National Weather Service predicting up to 70 miles per hour here in Manhattan. We also got our first word on a bridge that has been at least partially shut down. The Verrazano Narrows Bridge, the lower level westbound to Staten Island, is closed, though the Brooklyn-bound side remains open. And this is the first time that we're learning that a bridge or a tunnel has been closed.
I also saw a report just before I came down here that the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel Manhattan-bound is shut. So that's from one report I saw. And, of course, the MTA, which runs the bridges and tunnels within the city, could decide to shut any bridge or tunnel at any time,
depending on the winds. Exactly.
And David, with respect to New Jersey, I gather at least as of a few minutes before 9 o'clock, all of the Hudson River crossings were still open, though the advice is don't go there unless you absolutely have to.
Don't go there unless you absolutely have to. And the latest numbers we have about how many people are losing power, the latest from JCP&L, Jersey Central Power and Light, is that almost 8,000 people are currently without power. Similar numbers from PSE&G. This is developing. These numbers are going to change rapidly, but already a lot of people dealing with loss of power.
We could also report Con Ed here in the city reporting more than 3,100 customers without power. This is in the city in Westchester. The largest reported outages are in Brooklyn, where more than 1,500 are affected after winds apparently knocked some wires down already.
Richard, would we expect the areas of New York City that have their power lines underground not to lose power? A lot of people in Manhattan, for example, where there are no power lines above, are still worried about losing power. Would that be less of a concern there?
I actually was watching a press conference early with a Con Ed official. What they're worried about is, if, especially in lower Manhattan, if there's any of this sea surge that will go under the and hurt the underground cables. Basically, that salt water will basically deteriorate those cables. So Con Ed does have the option to shut off the power in those areas in advance of any kind of storm surge.
Now, you have both been talking and getting reports from people in evacuation zones. Richard, is everybody in so-called Zone A in New York City gone?
No, about 370,000 people live in these evacuation zones, which is Zone A. This includes Coney Island, Red Hook. There's other areas around the East River in Brooklyn, the Rockaways, Broad Channel, the Staten Island coastline, City Island, Battery Park City, and there's small stretches of the West Side waterfront and parts of the Lower East Side and the East Village. Now, WNYC Stephen Nesson is out in Brighton Beach, Brooklyn. He spoke to a resident who lives in Zone A at the Trump Village Apartments. He would only give his name as Bruce B., and he told Stephen that he's staying put. He does live on the seventh floor of a high-rise, but this is what he had to say.
Oh, where are we going to go? We're not going to go to other neighborhoods. Besides, my mother's nearby. I need to stay here. Her mother, too.
So she's elderly?
Yes, yes.
So you're just going to stick it out?
Sure, we're not going anywhere. We live in a high rise, so we don't figure anything's going to happen.
Even though the mayor suggested everyone in this area evacuate?
Oh, well, I'll listen to the mayor when he listens to the people about term limits. That's when I'll listen to him.
Okay, that gentleman was Bruce B. speaking with WNYC Stephen Nesson at the Trump Village Apartments in Brighton Beach.
And David, first, everybody evacuating the coastal zones in New Jersey?
Well, there have been these mandatory evacuations of the barrier islands, and Governor Chris Christie, and kind of a sequel of his get the hell off the beach line, had made a big deal about calling people stupid yesterday if they tried to ride out the storm on these barrier islands. And yes, we've been hearing reports about people trying to ride out the storm in some of these places, but very dangerous places. We heard reports earlier this morning from WNYC's Scott Gurian, who was in Monmouth Beach, just south of Seabright, where the water was coming over the seawall, and also coming from the west side of the island there, too, from the river, from the Shrewsbury River. So water flooding onto the island from both sides. So you can see why this is a place where you wouldn't want to be right now.
All right. Let's see. Do you have a clip of somebody?
Well, there were also these mandatory evacuations for residents in Jersey City, in basement and first floor units in several coastal areas in the city. These were supposed to be completed by 7 o'clock this morning. As of about an hour ago, about 60 people are in shelters. The city, according to Stan Eason, the director of communications for Jersey City, looks like a ghost town. Officials are going to start going around neighborhoods to see if there are any people out and about in some of these low-lying evacuation areas. And they will insist that they leave, that they move to higher ground. In Hoboken, city officials were urging residents who live in ground floor units and in low-lying areas of the city to voluntarily evacuate because of the potential for flooding. But Perry Clausen with the blog Hoboken411 says so far many residents have chosen to stay put.
The majority of the people, and this is in the hundreds, said that they were going to wait till it was absolutely necessary. Some people have already left town, and an equal amount of people also said they're staying. But nobody said they were leaving right away.
Obviously, a lot of people are taking it very seriously. There's this guy, Mark Palazzolo, who was boarding up his bait and tackle shop in Point Pleasant Beach. With the same wood that he used in past storms, crossing out the names of Hurricanes Isaac and Irene and spray painting Sandy next to them. But even he says this time might be different, saying, quote, "I think this one's going to do us in."
And, of course, people are saying this could be the worst storm to hit the New York area since a big hurricane in 1938. So this is going to be something, if the forecasts come true, that most people around here have not seen in their lifetimes. This is special coverage of Storm Sandy on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. WNYC's Richard Hake and New Jersey Public Radio's David First. We'll keep talking to you.
Yes, Brian.
As the morning goes on, we're going to take some phone calls right now from those of you calling in from around the area with local reports. Barry in Copaig on Long Island is going to be our first caller. Barry, thank you so much for checking in with us.
Good morning. We have water coming up over our docks and out in the street, so most of the people are staying put, and we have, so far, I have no flooding at all, at least in my basement, and I'm watching trucks go up and down my street, crazy as they are. The water is getting deep enough to go about halfway up their tires. I think what somebody else said is true, that we're probably going to have the worst storm that I've ever experienced. I've been here. I was here for Hurricane Donna in 63 and Gloria in 86, and I think this is going to be much worse.
Are people trying to get you to evacuate from where you are? Describe where your house is.
My house is on the south shore of Long Island. It's Babylon Town, about a half mile from the bay, and we have canals that run north-south, you know, in between the straits.
Uh-huh.
So I've got canals on either side of me. And no one has asked us to evacuate. And as a matter of fact, they did ask?
Mandatory evacuation.
Okay, mandatory evacuation, I hear in the background. Somebody says, yeah, so you've decided to buck that.
Yeah, well, I just want to watch, make sure that everything works correctly. If it gets seriously bad, if the electric goes out, I'll grab my dog, and I'll go up to someplace where it's a little higher.
Barry, good luck, and I hope if you make that decision much later, you'll still be able to get out with the water coming up above the tires, as you were describing in some of the streets around there. Thank you so much for checking in with us. Lori in Brooklyn Heights, you're on WNYC. Hello, Lori.
Hi. Well, I live at the top of one of the tallest buildings in Brooklyn, and my views are 360 degrees. I can tell you that this is a far greater water surge than we saw with Irene, and we're still hours from the worst of it. A fair amount of the new Brooklyn Bridge Waterfront Park is either underwater or water is lapping at it. The whole Pier 1 right next to the Brooklyn Bridge, the whole pathway and everything is now taking water. I can see across to Wall Street, and the heliport, the VIP heliport that President Obama uses, is underwater. And at that point, the FDR gets very low, almost at water level, and you can see the water is just lapping right up there. Similarly, the water taxi jetties that stick out between the South Street Seaport and the VIP heliport, the front ones are now pretty much underwater, and all the boats have been pushed back towards the FDR. Over at South Street Seaport, you can see a fair amount of water is already beginning to threaten the bottom of the seaport structure and the piering on the north side of it. I've never seen anything like this in all the years I've lived in Brooklyn, and this is hours away from the worst of it. I think that anybody who's down at the water level is pretty crazy. We've got white caps in the harbor.
That's a heck of a report, Lori, from somebody who, I don't know what you do for a living, if you're a professional journalist or not.
I used to work for NPR.
Oh, is that right? Well, I'm not surprised, given the accuracy, or I can't vouch for the accuracy, but given the descriptiveness of the report and with this 360 view that you have. So that's a great update for our listeners. Lori, hang on for a second because our producer wants to ask you a question. We're going to go next to Greg in Madison in New Jersey. Hi, Greg. You're on the air. Greg, can you hear me? All right. We'll get to Greg in Madison in a little bit. In fact, we'll take a short break right here and continue. This is continuing coverage of Storm Sandy on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is special coverage of Storm Sandy, Superstorm Frankenstorm. We don't know whether to call it a hurricane by the time it hits this region. It may be something else, kind of more of a classic nor'easter. And this will be a different kind of weather event depending on where you are. It's worth saying, along the coast, this could include record-breaking tidal flooding, especially tonight and tomorrow morning. Anywhere north and east of where the storm comes aground, that would be north and east of the Jersey coast, it could include winds of 70 miles an hour, the worst of which would be closer to the coast. Further inland, anywhere in our area, this could be a threatening rain event. 2 to 6 inches close to the coast, but 4 to 8 inches inland. Some forecasters predicting up to 11 inches of rain in some spots of inland New Jersey and the Hudson Valley over the next 2 days. Expect 4 to 8 foot storm surges along the Jersey Shore, Westchester, and Connecticut coastlines. And even with that, some people are saying 11-foot storm surges. So that's just a brief idea of how this could be a different kind of event depending on where in our area you are. Thank you for tuning in to WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio today. I'm Brian Lehrer, and this is special coverage, so we are preempting the BBC NewsHour and the takeaway this hour. Let's go to some of our reporters standing by around the region to see what's going on, and we'll start with Scott Gurian, who is by the ocean in Long Branch. Scott, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are things?
Well, I'm sitting in my car parked. I'm in downtown Long Branch right now, just a few blocks from the ocean. I was just over there till the police came and then made everyone move away. Just the waves that are lapping against the shore now are just really building and gigantic at this point, maybe 10, 12 feet, I would say. A lot of people, of course, gathered there, you know, taking photos and so forth. I was driving along the coast a little bit earlier on, just a bit north of here, up in getting up towards Seabright along Ocean Avenue, Route 36, which runs all along the shore. And up there, you could see water was actually starting to pour over the seawall, and the streets of the town were getting flooded with several inches of water. Water also coming from the other side, because Seabright is about 4 miles long, only about a block wide. And you've got the ocean on the one side, you've got the Shrewsbury and the Navesink rivers on the other side. So water is backing up from that way as well, coming from, you know, all directions. And, of course, it's still early on in the storm, so you can only imagine what it will be like by, say, late tomorrow.
Are you also talking to people? What are people telling you?
Not a lot of people out now. A lot of people have gotten out of town. They're staying with friends or family or at one of the evacuation centers in the area. There's one big one at Monmouth University and another one nearby, which was actually allowing people to go with pets. Some people have stayed. There's not a mandatory evacuation everywhere. Some places, certainly in Seabright, which is probably going to see enormous flooding, that was a mandatory evacuation and right along the water. In a little bit further south and certainly the Barrier Islands is a mandatory evacuation. I spoke to some people yesterday as they were, you know, hammering up, you know, boards of wood in front of businesses, making, you know, final preparations leaving town. And the sense I got was that most people, even if they weren't under a mandatory evacuation, they were leaving town. They were taking this seriously.
Scott Gurian in Long Branch. Scott, we'll keep checking back with you.
Thank you, Brian.
And we go next to Charles Lane in Port Jefferson on Long Island. Charles, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. How can you hear me?
I can hear you great. What's happening?
It's a pretty relaxed atmosphere right now. I'm in Port Jefferson overlooking the harbor. Port Jefferson is on the north shore, so we have low tide right now. And even low tide is pretty high. It's people tell me about 3 or 4 feet above high tide. We still have another 3 hours before we actually hit high tide. So everybody that I've spoken to is expecting this entire basin here to flood over. In back last year with Irene, it was about 2 feet above the docks last year, and it's expected to be much, much worse this year. But it's a pretty relaxed atmosphere. Most people have left. However, there was a hotel right next to me, and I can get guests eating their morning breakfast. But in 3 hours, they're going to be eating with fish swimming around their ankles, because this is just going to go up, should go up another 3 or 4 feet above the dock. So I'm not quite sure what their plan is yet.
Are the roads passable? We had a caller earlier from Copeg on the south shore of the Babylon area who was saying that the water was starting to rise in the streets.
Well, the south shore has high tide right now, so he is experienced high tide, and that's what the north shore is going to experience in 3 or 4 hours, about 7:30. And then again, in the worst high tide is going to be at midnight, at least here in Port Jefferson. I'd have to go back and check and see what the tonight's high tide in the south shore would be like.
Charles, I can hear the wind behind you. People can hear this into your microphone. Are the winds picking up very much?
Actually, I was hiding in an alcove. I can go back in the alcove. But it is windy, and this has this really fine mist, and it's actually really, really cold, surprisingly cold. I'm starting to shiver if you haven't been able to tell yet. But the winds are picking up, and the streets are relatively passable coming down here so far.
All right. It's in South. Charles, thanks a lot. We'll check back with you. And, of course, this is going to be a wind event much more than it is so far. You heard Charles Lane saying it's getting cold in Port Jefferson on the north shore of Long Island, but not overwhelmingly windy. Richard Hake before was reporting wind gusts of around 50 miles an hour already at Newark Airport. I heard a report of a 51-mile-an-hour gust at Kennedy Airport, and this, of course, is just going to worsen as the day goes on around the area. Let's go next to NPR's Robert Smith in Far Rockaway. Hi, Robert.
How are you doing?
Good. Describe the scene.
Well, you know, I'm at an interesting spot right here, which is it's down by the water on the channel between Atlantic Beach and Far Rockaway. And it's one of the last little bits of sand that people can get to left, because the tide is at its highest. Storm surges come in, so a lot of the beach is not accessible. But this is where people are filling sandbags. Those people who have decided not to evacuate have looked out there at the water, thought, oh no, I am not prepared. And so over the last half an hour, I have just seen person after person drive up with garbage bags, try and fill them with as much sand as they can, and rush back to their homes.
What does the beach look like?
Well, right here in the channel, it's kind of calm, but you can just see about half a mile down, incredibly high waves here on the south shore in Rockaway Beach and Far Rockaway, maybe 10 to 12 feet. And I was just down a little further east, I guess, west, I don't even know where I'm going anymore, but I was further down the beach, and it was lapping at the boardwalk. You couldn't see any sand left. In fact, you could feel the water sort of push underneath you in the boardwalk, and it was a little bit scary. And I should say, some of the streets here on the Rockaway Peninsula are now impassable. I've seen cars with water up to their hoods.
Have you checked in on any of the housing projects, the New York City housing projects in the Rockaways? I had heard that Mayor Bloomberg ordered the power shut off to public housing projects that are in the evacuation zone, Zone A, and I would assume that includes some of the ones where you are in the Rockaways, and that was a way to make sure that people who were really under the jurisdiction of the city did evacuate. Have you checked in on any of those folks or those buildings?
You know, I have not yet. There was one building I saw, which was a housing project, which I couldn't actually get to because it was in a low-lying area and there was already, I don't know, a foot or two of water outside. And this isn't necessarily the waves lapping up. This was water surging up from the sewer system and sort of filling the area in front of it. I will say about the evacuation, when I was earlier down at Rockaway Beach, the police were actually in sort of commandeered city buses. So they were offering people sort of last chance public transit rides out of the Rockaways.
Yes, and the MTA had announced that yesterday, that as they were shutting down the subways and the bus system, they were going to be using New York City buses to help with evacuation. So there's an example of that taking place. All right, Robert Smith in Far Rockaway, we'll check back with you.
Thanks.
And a report from Connecticut, the number of power outages is increasing quickly. And, of course, utilities' response to Hurricane Irene had become a political issue there. Connecticut Light and Power says hundreds of customers now are without power. Governor Malloy asked a task force to ensure fuel suppliers are fully stocked. Many residents along the Long Island Sound did heed warnings and evacuated. And so, listeners, if you're anywhere in the Westport area, which I know was so hard hit during Irene, or anywhere else along the Sound in Connecticut or anywhere in Connecticut that you want to report in from, we're collecting your reports of what's going on throughout our area. So from Connecticut, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. From anywhere in New York, anywhere in New Jersey, call us up. We need everybody to report on this storm because we can't have professional journalists everywhere. Tell us what's happening on your block. Tell us what's happening in your area. Report on the water. Report on the wind. Report on the trees. Report on the cars. 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. Joining us now is Adam Sobel, professor of climate and atmospheric science at Columbia University. Some of you may remember he was on the Brian Lehr Show on Friday morning anticipating the storm. Professor Sobel, thanks very much for joining us again.
Good morning, Brian.
So is this progressing about the way you expected on Friday?
Yes. The models had it pretty much right, and in fact, some of them had it right as far as a week ago. But it's looking like Sandy will make landfall somewhere in South Jersey, and it's going to be a very big and powerful storm, and it looks like it's playing out pretty much according to plan so far.
What are the highest winds that you're hearing right now, and how high do you expect them to get in our region?
So I haven't seen the latest reports from places on land, but the NHC's reports of what's happening in the storm are that there's a sustained 75-mile-an-hour winds over large areas. That's hurricane above hurricane force. And I think for New York City, we're likely to see tropical storm force winds for a very long period of time. And hurricane force, which could mean 75, 80, maybe even briefly up to 90 miles per hour for shorter periods of time, which I don't think we've experienced any time in recent memory.
Are you familiar with the history of 1938? People are saying the biggest storm until now in the last century in the New York area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area, was a big hurricane that took the region somewhat by surprise in 1938. Did you study that in climate school when you were studying for your profession?
I didn't study in climate school, but I've certainly studied it a bit since then. Living here, one has to be aware of it. 1938, took the region more by surprise. We didn't have the kind of forecasting capabilities that we have now. The thing about 38 was that its path was more typical. It came straight up, paralleling the coast, and made landfall on Long Island. And that's more typical. It's because of the way the coastline is shaped here, it's hard for a storm to get right in at the city. They usually, as they're coming up from the south, they'll either go over land and weaken or curve out to sea. And so what's making this one worse than 38 for the city, I think, although 38 was very destructive on Long Island and New England, but it's because this one is coming in from the east to the west, which is very unusual. And that's what a storm really has to do in order to put New York City on the right side of the track where the strongest winds are and give us this strong storm surge threat. So, I think this will be a bigger event for the city per se, although 38 was a stronger storm in terms of peak winds at landfall than this one will be. But this one is bigger, and it's at a worse angle for the city and the regions right around the city.
One of the things making this very unusual, if not unique, is the fact that there are two weather systems coming from the north and west at the same time as this is coming up in the Atlantic. Have you been keeping your eye on those, and what is that confluence actually proving to be like?
Well, that's also something that the models seem to have predicted in a way that so far is playing out like it was supposed to. The winter storm is a big wiggle in the jet stream, and then there's what we call a short wave, which is a smaller storm riding along it that amplifies it, and a blast of cold air coming in from the north, which is what some people are calling the additional system. Some people are saying this is a merger of three systems rather than two. What's really fascinating, if you watch the animations coming from the output of the models, is that at mid-levels, there's the cyclone, Sandy, and then there's this extratropical storm, which has a little bit of a cyclone with it as well, although it's not a tropical cyclone. And they're starting to orbit each other in a way that's called the Fujiwara effect. When two vortices get close to each other, they orbit each other, and it's that little dance they're doing that's going to bring Sandy on shore. And as they do that, it's going to they're going to swallow each other and merge into one entity. But it's an amazing phenomenon from a fluid dynamics point of view, although it's hard to be that dispassionate about it now that it's really about to be here and do so much damage.
What do you mean fluid dynamics? What does that mean?
That means the physics of how the atmosphere moves. We don't usually get to see this pattern of two storms coming close enough to rotate around each other and merge in this way. It's just something that we know the physics of, but we don't get to observe it too often here in New York City or in the Atlantic at all, for that matter.
Are there any causes of this, or is this just a big coincidence that these storms are coming together and moving in this way?
Well, there are a lot of proximate causes, but it's hard to see any larger forces at work at this moment, although I think a lot of us will study it afterwards to see what we can say. But there's a very strong phase of what's called the North Atlantic Oscillation, which is a fluctuation of the jet stream and the storm tracks moving north and south that is always going on. It's always wobbling around. The jet's always moving north to south, but it's in an extreme phase right now, and that's related to the blocking high over Greenland, and that keeps the storms jammed up so that they can't. It's called the blocking high, and that means it blocks them from going towards the east and keeping them stuck here. So there's that, and there's this big mid-latitude storm system, and then there just happened to be a tropical cyclone, quite a strong tropical cyclone, in just the right place to get sucked into this set of circumstances. So there's a lot of causes, but I don't know that we can ascribe it to any broader ultimate cause.
Another thing about this storm is that it looks to be massive in size, like 1,000 miles from end to end, practically. Can you describe what you've seen and how that compares to typical hurricanes?
It's very large, and that's you got it right. The last I looked, the radius of tropical storm force winds was about 500 miles, so that means, 1,000 miles end-to-end, that wind or a tropical storm strength, which is very, very large. And that is somewhat typical. I don't know if that extreme size is somewhat typical, but the fact that the wind radius is expanding is what happens when tropical cyclones become extratropical. So it's the same hybridization process that is leading us to call it, you know, Frankenstorm or Perfect Storm or whatever your favorite nickname is. That same process is what's made the wind field become so large. Normally in a tropical cyclone, you have very intense winds, but over a much smaller radius.
And when you say extratropical, does that just mean it left the tropics?
No, I shouldn't use that technical language. Extratropical just means a winter-type storm, the type of normal weather that we get up here in the higher latitudes. It's not of tropical origin. It gets its energy from the jet stream, whereas a tropical system gets its energy from the warm oceans of the tropics. So they're just two, tropical and extratropical, are just two different types of storms that typically inhabit two different latitude bands of the world, the tropics and the higher latitudes, and they work differently, and here the two of them are coming together and merging.
And before you go, what would be the most accurate thing to call this storm? Of course, we're saying Hurricane Sandy because it was a hurricane, but it may not be a hurricane right now. Hurricane Irene was a hurricane when it hit this area. It was a tropical storm. People are saying this is no longer going to be a hurricane by the time it really hits our area. It's going to be like a nor'easter. Then, of course, there are the nicknames, Frankenstorm and Superstorm and whatever. Should I call this Hurricane Sandy, or what would you technically call this?
Right now, it's still called Hurricane Sandy. I mean, you brought up two issues. One is the strength of the storm. So any hurricane, when it becomes weak enough that the winds are no longer what's called hurricane strength, which is around 75 miles an hour, then we call it a tropical storm. But it's still the same kind of entity. It's just a weaker version of it. A tropical storm is just a weaker version of a hurricane. It gets a little less organized, and you often can't see the eye, but it's still a tropical system. Then the extratropical or winter storms are a different animal entirely. And so the question here, so right now Hurricane Sandy is still looking pretty tropical, and it's still hurricane strength. So it's still Hurricane Sandy. The models are predicting that right around the time of landfall, we'd want to start calling it not a hurricane anymore, that it will have undergone its transition. It's tricky to pin down exactly when that transition in character happens. It's an extratropical storm is more asymmetric in its character as opposed to the more circular kind of swirl of a hurricane, and it also becomes cold in the middle rather than warm in the middle. There's a lot of differences in it, and it's hard to draw a fine line, but I think the main thing to know is that it won't be any weaker. When we decide this is not a hurricane, it won't make it any less dangerous. And this issue of what to call it has made the warnings very complicated. The Hurricane Center has decided not to call it a hurricane, to issue hurricane warnings this far north, because they don't want to confuse people when it changes character, and then they have to start calling it not a hurricane. They think people will not get worried. So to avoid that and make sure people stay worried or at least concerned all the time, they've chosen to not issue the hurricane warnings. But at this moment, it's still a hurricane. It'll change at some point, but it won't become less dangerous until it's been inland for a while.
Adam Sobel, professor of climate and atmospheric science at Columbia University, thank you for all that good insight into what I should still call Hurricane Sandy. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This is special coverage of Hurricane Sandy on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. I'm Brian Lehrer. Now to some more of your calls with your reports on what's happening around our area. Bryn in Red Hook, you're on WNYC. Hello, Bryn.
Hi, Brian. We love your show. It's such a comfort to hear your voice today.
Thank you so much. And Red Hook is in an evacuation zone, isn't it?
It is. We decided to stay. We just thought it would be simpler with our baby and our dog to stay put, and we've made precautions.
What's your situation like?
Well, we just went down to Valentino Pier, where we bring our dog every morning, and the water has come up onto the pier and onto the park itself, and the dogs were very happily running around. But it is a little spooky. A lot of people have left. There's sandbags, people with doors, but there is lots of water coming up.
Do you see any damage yet?
No damage yet. I did hear a story about some sparks from an electric line a couple blocks over, but no damage yet at our place.
All right. Well, I hope you're doing the right thing. Stay safe.
Thank you, Ryan. Take care.
Thank you. And Ivar in Battery Park City, you're on the air. Hello, Ivar.
How are you? I really enjoy your show as well.
Thank you. What's your situation?
Well, I was adding to some of the information that you've been providing. Governor's Island has definitely been breached, at least looking from the point of view of looking from the battery out. The fortress there is more like a naval facility than a fort right now. You can clearly see water coming over the edges of the island. Looking towards, looking south, Ellis Island, there's a bridge that comes over to Ellis Island that's nearly submerged on the ends of the bridge, and Ellis Island is also taking water, as is the rail facility, I think a Weehawken, not the Weehawken, but there's an old abandoned rail facility in New Jersey as well. So things are pretty significant here.
And why are you there? Wasn't Battery Park City supposed to be evacuated?
It was, and we're watching.
What floor do you live on?
Hmm?
What floor do you live on?
18. It's not that 18 is obviously not a problem. We're watching the seawall in Battery Park City, and the seawall is a good bit of distance between the Hudson and that. And also, interestingly, the Hudson has calmed a bit over the last hour. Perhaps it's a tidal effect. But we're watching. But then again, vacating to our daughter's place on 25th Street and 8th Avenue, I'm not sure, at the ground level, gives us a hell of a lot of security to look forward to.
Sometimes there are no perfect choices. Ivar, thank you very much for checking in with us. John in Bradley Beach, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Hey, Brian. Great to have an extra hour of you this morning. My wife and kids just left in the car, and we jumped in the car, went to Ocean Ave in Bradley Beach, drove into Belmar, and the Shark River separates Belmar and the small town of Avon. And the water's up over the banks on either side already. I've never seen that. Admittedly, I don't normally go out and, like, you know, check things out at this point in a storm. But already over the banks, and, of course, they're talking about a much bigger storm surge. And there's an inordinate amount of people, like, driving up to get out of their cars, look, and take pictures. And admittedly, I was one of them just to, you know, driving by. But it seems at a certain point, I think the governor has to tell those people to get the hell off the beach.
Well, tweet your picture at Brian Laris so people can see what you saw, if it was interesting, and then get the hell off the beach.
Thanks.
John, thank you for your call. We'll continue with our continuing coverage in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. This is special coverage of Hurricane Sandy on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. I'm Brian Lehrer. We are preempting the takeaway in the BBC News Hour this hour to bring you continuing coverage. Listeners, we want to continue to get your reports from all around our area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, different parts of the region. If you're along the coast on Long Island, we've already had callers from North Shore and South Shore. We just had a caller from Bradley Beach. We'd love to hear from anybody else anywhere along the New Jersey shore. Of course, we hope everybody along the New Jersey shore and anywhere where you were supposed to evacuate have evacuated. But any reports of what you see, welcome here. Connecticut, if you're along the Sound or in Westchester along the water, what are you seeing? What are you hearing? What are people saying to you? 212-433-WNYC. Everybody needs to be a reporter on this story because conditions can vary so much, even block to block. So 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to our webpage at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, or you can post to our social media feeds at Brian Lehrer on Twitter or Brian Lehrer WNYC on Facebook. Of course, the buses and the subways are shut down. The commuter rails are shut down. Amtrak is shut down from Washington to Boston. As of just before I went on the air, for some reason, Kennedy and LaGuardia and JFK and Newark airports were all open. I don't know if anything's actually arriving or landing. Bradley Airport is going to close officially at 1 o'clock. MacArthur's already closed on the island. The MTA says service will resume 12 hours after the storm passes. What is considered the moment that the storm has passed, I don't know, because they say rain and wind will only gradually die down over a couple of days, so that'll be something to watch. The three reasons that MTA Chairman Joe Loda gave for shutting the subways and that Mayor Bloomberg gave, it is unsafe to be in an elevated train in the wind. Probably unsafe in a bus, too, in a lot of places, avoiding water damage to the trains, and also just to discourage people from going out. Chairman Loda also said with respect to the MTA bridges, they will officially slow traffic when the winds reach 39 miles an hour. There are already gusts above that in parts of the region. We've had about 50-mile-an-hour gusts recorded both at Kennedy and at Newark airports. If the winds reach 60 miles an hour, especially on any sustained basis, then the bridges will be shut down, as well as perhaps the tunnels within New York City. As of a short time ago, the Hudson River crossings were still open, though, of course, people are discouraged from using them. I'm told that the Verrazano Bridge, and I'm not sure if that's in both directions, has been shut down. And I had heard that the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel, as of about an hour ago, was not taking traffic to Manhattan. So this is going to be a fluid situation. If you hear that something is open, it doesn't mean it's going to be open when you get there. And I realize some people have good reasons for having to go out, but hopefully most of you are where you already will be to hunker down and wait out the storm. And we'll keep bringing you all the information that we can get our hands on from many, many sources as we go along here. Let's keep hearing from some of you, some of our callers. Our lines are full at the moment at 212-433-WNYC. Greg in Madison, New Jersey. You're on the air. Hello, Greg.
Hello. Good morning. I wanted to give a shout to the borough of Madison, New Jersey. I was sitting in my kitchen, and the yard waste truck came through much earlier than usual, collecting the bags of leaves that people had raked up over the weekend. And then, much to my surprise, about 45 minutes later, a truck and a crew scooping up those leaves that had been raked into the street. So Madison is doing a great job clearing the streets of leaves so that the storm drains don't get clogged. So,
Greg, thank you very much for that shout-out. Mark in Irvington, New York. You're on WNYC. There's an Irvington, New Jersey, and there's Irvington, New York, which is in Westchester, Mark, right?
Good morning, Brian. Yeah, we're right on the water. We're a little bit south of the Tappan Zee Bridge, and I'm standing on the deck of our boat club and looking at our dock, and the water is already coming over our dock. And we're lucky that we have our moorings and our floats in, but this is going to be really serious because the water level from this high tide, which is about now, is already about as high as Irene, and this is nothing compared to what we're going to get tonight.
Right, and you're the second caller to report that it's high tide along the Sound. I guess that would be called Long Island Sound where you are, right?
No, that's the south side. That's the east side of Westchester. We're on the Hudson River.
Oh, you're on the Hudson River.
Yeah, just below the Tappan Zee Bridge. In fact, I'm looking up at the bridge. We've got a white-capped river and very high waves coming in have pretty much eroded the beach of our village park and lapping over the bulkhead of the park. And what's interesting to see is that because of the counterclockwise rotation of the storm, the wind is coming from the north, even though the storm is approaching from the south.
Mark, thank you very much. So high tide on the Hudson right now, high tide on the Long Island Sound as well, low tide on the coastal beaches. That high tide will be tonight. And one of the things to watch is, in fact, whether the storm hits the coast before high tide. High tide will be around 8 or 9 o'clock tonight, something in there. And the impact at high tide would make it that much worse along the Atlantic coast. So if the storm arrives more quickly, and since the winds in the storm and the speed of the storm was picking up earlier this morning, it is possible that we would be spared a little bit by the storm hitting before high tide tonight, but that is still an unknown. So high tide now in the Hudson and the Long Island Sound, high tide coming tonight along the ocean coasts. And let's go next to Meg on Shark River Island in New Jersey. Meg, hello, you're on the air. Describe the scene.
Oh, hi, how are you?
Okay.
Well, the wind sounds like a freight train, and the water, I've never seen it as high as I've been here for about 15 years. I'm on Shark River Island, which is sandwiched between Avon, Neptune, and Belmar, facing Shark River Hills. The front of my house is the Shark River Yacht Club, and the water has come all the way up the street. Parts of the dock are in the street, and I guess our fear, my neighbor and I, the two of the few people here on the island, worry about the next high tide, how much worse it's going to be. We are fast and furiously taking everything from the first floor that we didn't get, bringing it to higher ground, and it's scary.
It sounds scary. When you say the wind is like a freight train, sometimes they use that description to describe tornadoes, not to say you're in a tornado. There is no tornado watch in effect. But have you ever been in anything like this wind?
In 92, I lived on the beach in Spring Lake on Pitney, and they had asked to have us evacuate. And we had lost a good part of the Spring Lake Boardwalk during the Great Nor'easter, and that's the only thing I can really compare it to. It comes in bursts, but I'm afraid when it's sustained, what's going to happen to our community? I think the East Coast is potentially in for a catastrophe here. And I'm very concerned.
Well,
and just to, you know, hopefully
that's right. We'll
hopefully make it out okay.
Right. And you have yet to evacuate. Is that what you're saying?
I have yet to evacuate. I may or may not. I may not have the option at this point. The water has come up to a point where I live on the island that I just don't know if we'll be able to get through it if we choose to evacuate. However, we do have four floors on the townhouse, and I can get high up. And I plan on when the water starts to come into the house, which we suspect, unfortunately, it's going to do. We expect probably 3 to 5 feet in the first floor if what they say is coming.
It does sound...
We have a fourth floor that we can go. We have higher floors we can go to, so we plan on cutting the electric when the water comes close, and just going to the fireplace for heat.
It does sound like a really scary situation, Meg. Stay in touch with us. Stay in touch with authorities too. I guess if you can't get out, and at least you have those higher floors in your house, and it sounds like a very prudent decision to cut the electricity at that certain point. I hope everything is okay for you and your family, Meg, on Shark River Island. John, in Waterside Plaza, you're on WNYC. Hello, John.
Brian, hi, how are you?
Okay. Describe where you are. Is that like 59th Street in the East River?
No, Waterside Plaza is about 23rd to 28th Street in the East River.
Okay.
Built around 1972. FDR, I'm looking out my window at FDR, and we've got two lanes closed due to bad puddle. Traffic lights are snap backed up. Then I'm looking down at the park in the 20s on the river. The water is at the height of the wall and lapping into the park. I'm supposed to have evacuated. I did for the last one, but we're three people and four cats. We went to Connecticut. I figure I'm safer here than driving on the roads in Connecticut. And I don't figure the water's going to get to the 26th floor, so the only concern is loss of electricity, so I got the bathtub full to flush the toilet.
Right, good idea. Did they tell you why they want you to evacuate even from
mandatory.
That very high floor?
No, just because it's mandatory.
For the whole
zone. In the map, in Area A, have to leave. And I know the manager of the project, everybody's lined up. It's a cute little community, 1,200 people. We have our own grocery store and everything. It's really a nice place. Everybody's lined up in a grocery store, which we have right in our complex. And I ran into the building manager, and I said, how much trouble am I in if I don't leave? He says, I don't want to hear that. So looking out the windows, they're four 40-story buildings.
What percentage, and I got to go in about 10 seconds, but what percentage of the people in your building do you think are still there with you?
50, because I was looking at the lights of the other buildings. Quick question for you. Should the windows, when you have an expert on, should the windows be open a crack to equalize pressure, or should they just be closed?
Okay, and I don't know the answer to that question, so I'll try to get that for you. John in Waterside Plaza, hang on. Our producers want to ask you a question. Our coverage continues of Hurricane Sandy on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. This is special coverage of Hurricane Sandy on WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. We welcome those of you just tuning in for the regular edition of The Brian Lehrer Show. And we welcome some listeners from around the UK and around the world via the BBC Radio 5 Live channel. Richard Bacon from the BBC's Radio 5 Live is joining us as his listeners listen in to the Brian Lehrer Show for a little while this morning. Richard, hello from New York.
Hello, hello, Brian. Hello. I just did an introduction to yourself here on BBC Radio 5 Live.
I hope I didn't contradict anything you said.
No, not at all. I think they complemented each other perfectly, Brian. Tell us, where you're in New York. You're on air. Just set the scene for us, Brian. Where exactly are you in New York?
Well, WNYC is located in Lower Manhattan, less than a mile or about a mile from the World Trade Center site, not that far from the tip of Lower Manhattan, which is one of the evacuation zones because that's where New York Harbor is, and New York Harbor is expected to experience a water event like people living in this area have never seen in their lifetimes. They're saying probably the biggest water event in the New York metropolitan area since 1938, when a big hurricane hit the area then, because of the confluence of Hurricane Sandy, which is heading up the East Coast, and two winter storms, which more classically come from the north and west toward our area. These things rarely happen at the same time. This is one of those moments where they are happening at the same time, and that's why the storm surges are expected to be so high. Later today, when the storm makes landfall sometime tonight, right around the time of high tide in the Atlantic Ocean, and the other storms converge at the same time. So that's a little bit of a nutshell of what's going on here and why it's so threatening and why so many people have evacuated.
Brian, I'm sorry that I can't set a scene that's anything like as dramatic as that here in the northwest of England, which is where we're broadcasting from at the moment. And I know it's a grim day in New York, so I hope you don't mind me expressing, if you like, a personal thrill to be broadcasting with you on WNYC at the moment. And I think, if it's all right, I'm guessing that my listeners would quite like to hear from your listeners as well.
Yes, and we have a lot to do, so your listeners can listen in as we take care of some business here, which will also inform them, those of you in the UK getting schadenfreude or whatever you're getting by listening in on the troubles of New York. We have no Olympics. You got that from us. We have no Queen having a jubilee, but we have Hurricane Sandy. And we have WNYC's Richard Hake and David First from New Jersey Public Radio here in the studio with some of the latest for the people in our area to hear, as well as the people in the UK and anywhere else. Richard, what's up?
And Brian, the latest position of Hurricane Sandy, about 310 miles southeast of New York City, and the center of the storm is expected to be near the mid-Atlantic coast sometime this evening. Now, the National Weather Service said earlier that this storm still has top sustained winds of 85 miles per hour. This is still a very, very strong storm. Looking at the latest readings from Central Park, we already have wind gusts going up to 33 miles per hour. LaGuardia Airport, 58 miles per hour. Newark Liberty Airport, wind gusts up to 38 miles per hour. There are also sustained winds at around 30 miles, 35 miles. So it is getting a little more severe out there. David Stark is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service. We spoke to him earlier. He says while the rain will continue all day, the worst winds will hit later this afternoon and tonight.
At 6 p.m., that may be one of the peak times with the highest impact. We could be seeing winds sustained 40 to 55 miles per hour, and our gusts will be approaching or at or above hurricane force, which is 75 to 85 miles per hour.
So the storm expected to make some landfall on the central New Jersey coastline, and he calls this a worst-case scenario for the region, and that's because the northwest quadrant of the storm is where the storm surge will go. So lots of flooding for the New York City area because we're right in that area.
And David First, what's the latest from New Jersey?
Well, you're talking about the winds having a peak around that time. And Brian, as you mentioned, high tide coming this evening also. And forecasters have been warning about unprecedented flooding, and we're starting to see the effects of that this morning. Flooding has forced officials to close a section of the Garden State Parkway. The parkway is closed in both directions south of the Atlantic City Expressway at exit 38. Streets are rapidly flooding around the boardwalk area in Atlantic City near the Atlantic City Expressway. As we've been hearing, all 12 casinos in Atlantic City are shut down. In Cape May, the ocean has also breached the main oceanfront drive, Ocean Avenue, near the city's southern end. And it's a little more official now. Governor Christie announced today that federal aid has been made available to the state of New Jersey. He requested this yesterday to supplement the state and local emergency response efforts. And if the wind is peaking at the same time as the storm is coming ashore in New Jersey, and the high tide is expected to come this evening around 7 p.m., forecasters are saying those storm surges associated with those high tides could submerge the barrier islands, and that's why we've had these mandatory evacuations.
We are standing by for a news conference from New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. He is in Lower Manhattan. I'm told he is around the World Trade Center area. And Richard, his update is expected to pertain largely to infrastructure. Are you familiar with what the governor is going to be addressing?
I believe he was at the World Trade Center site looking how flood mitigation happens as it happens around the different city buildings, and also with respect to Con Edison. Many of the power, the infrastructure there is underground in Manhattan. And with any type of storm surge, any kind of salt water going into those basically manhole covers will affect the electricity. And Con Ed is also talking about perhaps shutting that down in advance of the storm.
Let's go to WNYC Steve Nesson, who is in – oh, we don't have Steve. Well, then, you know what? I want to take a call from Sina in Rockaway, New Jersey, because Sina says that she lived through the 1938 hurricane, which is the only one in anybody's memory living now that this is being compared to. Sina, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Brian.
May I ask how old you are?
Yes, I'm 86.
And what do you remember about 1938?
1938, I lived in Brooklyn. My father did business on Long Island, and he was coming home from Southampton, and they didn't predict the storm, and he started driving home. And by the time he managed to get home to Brooklyn, the windshield of his car was completely embedded with sand and had to be replaced. You can imagine the force of the wind.
I guess there was no warning. Like today we get media hype for days and days and days on end, whether there's a storm or not, to match the hype. In this case, it looks like there probably will be. But they did have radio in 1936. Do you remember any media reports of an impending storm?
No, I don't. I was in school, and I remember coming home from school because they closed school, and I had to take the trolley car home to get home and then walk part of the way in the storm. And I lived near Washington Avenue in Brooklyn, which is alongside the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens. And all the trees at the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens that faced Washington Avenue along the fence were completely uprooted and had to be replaced. The entire length from almost from Eastern Parkway to Empire Boulevard, all of the trees were completely torn out along the fence.
In 1938, I mistakenly said 36 a moment ago. That was 1938. Richard Hake has a question for you, Sina.
Yes. What,
wasn't this storm actually called the Long Island Express? Isn't that what they nicknamed it?
I think so.
And that was because I believe it moved through so quickly, unlike this storm, which is expected to kind of stall and stay here for a couple of days.
It didn't stay for a couple of days. It just came through and completely destroyed things. And it was a storm that, of course, I remember as I was about 12 years old, so I have a memory of it.
Sina, thank you so much for calling in.
I just thought a little historical note might be interesting to you.
Really interesting. Thank you. We really appreciate it. And stay safe during this storm. Now, Richard Bacon from BBC Radio 5 Live. I don't know if you want to hang around as we listen to the New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, who's going to start a news conference momentarily. But there you've been hearing a little taste from our reporters and one of our listeners with a long memory to draw on about what's going on. So Richard Bacon and the BBC 5 Live having been listening in on us a little bit. We expect Governor Cuomo. I'm seeing the desk at which he's going to give a briefing in Lower Manhattan, still empty, so he has not walked out to that desk yet. David First from New Jersey Public Radio, do you have an update on the roads or the Hudson River crossings?
Well, we have an update on the power. We're just hearing about the trees coming down, and most of the outages that are being reported right now are due to downed trees hitting power lines and also flooding in substations. Con Edison reporting more than 3,100 customers without power in New York City and Westchester. The largest reported outages are in Brooklyn, where more than 1,500 were affected after winds knocked down some wires. More than 11,000 homes and businesses in New Jersey are without electricity, mainly in Ocean and Cumberland counties. Jersey Central Power and Light is reporting more than 9,000 affected customers, the largest outages there in Middletown Township. PSE&G, Public Service Electric and Gas Company, reporting more than 2,000 outages, the most concentrated in Mercer County. In Connecticut, Connecticut Light and Power reporting over 10,000 customers affected, the largest outages in Griswold and Pomfret right now.
And this is, of course, an East Coast long, or at least mid-Atlantic up to our region, long storm. Some of the other things coming in from elsewhere. Ocean City, Maryland police say there is significant damage from Sandy to a downtown pier at the town's boardwalk. The Coast Guard says it has rescued 14 people in Portsmouth, Virginia, that's in the Norfolk, Virginia Beach area, who had to abandon a tall ship off the North Carolina coast. Two people are still being sought. So obviously a very threatening weather event all up and down the eastern seaboard.
Brian, I'm just getting some information in from the newsroom that all lanes of the FDR Drive northbound are closed from East 60th Street to East 125th Street. This, again, due to flooding. The FDR South is also closed from Exit 17 through the Triborough Bridge west leg of that roadway. We also, this is the time we have to really start watching the bridges because those wind speeds are getting up there. Officials did promise to close bridges down once many of the winds reach up to maybe 60 miles per hour. That's what we're getting right now. The Tappan Zee Bridge speed has been reduced to 35 miles per hour, but once the winds reach 60 miles per hour or more, that bridge will be closed. Earlier this morning, the Verrazano Narrows Bridge lower level westbound to Staten Island closed, though the Brooklyn-bound side does remain open. And we also want to note that alternate side of the street parking regulations have been suspended. A lot of listeners have been asking about that.
In Connecticut, Greenwich officials who have been criticized for not updating the public about the town's emergency management plan now say they're doing everything possible to keep residents informed about Sandy. The Greenwich Times reports that First Selectman Peter Tassie says information about the town's emergency operations and how officials prepare for and respond to emergencies is public, whatever that means. Several documents containing general hurricane information are available on the town website. Greenwich Times is actually the name of that news organization. They submitted a Freedom of Information Act request. They had to do that to obtain materials in the emergency plan related to hurricane planning and response. So some controversy about communication from officials in Greenwich. We are expecting Governor Cuomo momentarily. We will also talk about politics 8 days before the election when we continue. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer with you on this eerie and threatening day. Be safe, everybody. Please heed the warnings that everybody is giving you. We will hear the news conference from Governor Cuomo when he begins. It was scheduled for 10:15, so presumably that will be starting shortly, and we'll keep updating you on the weather and giving you lots of storm-related information of all kinds. But we'll keep going in and out of weather news, too. We figure you don't want to listen to only that, and we will interrupt at any time if anything important develops, such as whenever Governor Cuomo starts. There is this little thing called the presidential election now taking place in early voting states like Florida and Ohio. To conclude on what we still call Election Day, a week from tomorrow. So who's winning? Well, here are two pollsters who couldn't agree on CNN's State of the Union with Candy Crowley yesterday about what's happening with the gender gap. Listen to this.
This race isn't moving towards Obama. It's moving in any direction towards Romney, including in those swing states. And that trend and that average is important.
I disagree. I think that it's actually pretty stable. And that's where I think the ground game that everyone's talking about matters the most. But I will tell you, you're right. Women are not even, but they're about 51-52% for Obama, and he got 56%. The only reason why he's ahead a point or two, depending on the poll you look at nationally, is that he's actually doing okay with men. Romney's getting about 51% of men, which would mean a pretty small gender gap.
I think that's Dana, guess what? We're going to know for sure. I think that's totally wrong. President Obama is losing white men by 30-plus points. He's going to get...
all men.
Yeah, he's going to get whacked by men by almost a double-digit margin.
He split men evenly in 2008, so that would be a huge drop.
It is going to be huge, and that's why he could lose the election.
Pollsters Bill McInturf and Anna Greenberg on CNN State of the Union with Candy Crowley. An idea of how difficult it is to discern what's actually going on. With me now to talk about that and more is Ben Smith, editor of BuzzFeed.com. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Brian.
What's your reaction to that clip, first of all? Do you have a take on these competing polls or interpretation of the polls?
I mean, I think, you know, it's not a terribly clear race. Usually in the presidential campaign at this point, we know what's going on. It's subject to interpretation, and so partisans on both sides, whether deliberately or not, are trying to tell stories that both please them and will help their candidates, because I think both candidates believe that some of these remaining undecided voters will jump on the bandwagon of whoever they think is winning. So both parties are very, very committed to pretending total confidence that they're winning.
You know, David Brooks has a theory that if Obama wins Ohio and therefore the election, it's from the ironic combination of the auto bailout, keeping white working class men from the waiting arms of Romney as they're flocking to him in other states, and the failure of environmentalists to stop fracking, which is the other thing driving a decent economic recovery in Ohio. But we have to break in because Governor Cuomo is going to give us an update on the storm right now.
Directed that New York City transit system shut down, and at this point all subway, rail, bus systems have been suspended in accordance with the plan. The surge concerns that you'll hear more about this morning, just by comparison, and Hurricane Irene.
So this is an introduction to Governor Cuomo from another New York State official. We'll get you his ID, but let's listen in.
And the storm surge of about 9.5 feet. The difference now is you're looking at a high tide this evening between about 8 and 9 o'clock, full moon, and a storm surge predicted at 6 to 11 feet above normal. If that water level were to verify approximately over 11 feet, it would break the record that was set by Hurricane Donna in September of 1960 of 10.5 feet.
This is Howard Glazer, the Director of Emergency Services for the state of New York.
Projected storm surge closer to Irene, but the latest information we have is that Irene levels are currently being seen in the region right now. Wind also is a major concern, damaging winds of long duration, 35 to 45 miles an hour, 40 to 75 mile an hour gusts. We're hearing some predictions of 90 mile an hour gusts in the region as well, with the strongest winds expected later today and this evening. The governor will have a number of announcements to make today that build on the steps that he's taken over the last couple of days. But first, as you can see, we're here with our federal partners as well. And I'd like to ask Colonel Owen to begin with his presentation.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Glazer. I'm here representing the New York District of the Army Corps of Engineers, and we've had a strong partnership with New York State, and it's pretty clear to us as one of the agencies that assists FEMA in doing the federal response to disasters that New York State is very well prepared, and our assets and our capabilities only come in after the state and has exceeded their capabilities, which at this time, again, the state looks very well prepared to do what needs to be done to ride out the effects of this event. So a couple of things that we'd like to emphasize is we've talked about the surge a little bit in lower Manhattan. That's one of the scenarios we think could be problematic. So right now we see the storm at Hurricane Irene levels. So all of you that are familiar with the Hurricane Irene effects from last year, this event, we're already at those levels at this point. So if you've driven along in the city in Manhattan, as the governor has done, witness them, you've seen that those levels where they're at. So we think there could be some overtopping based on the tidal surge that's going to happen this evening. Again, Mr. Glazer pointed that out. And we're going to be prepared to assist the state in any assistance they have with specific capabilities and emergency power generation, potentially some pumping and other things that may be necessary, again, if the capabilities are exceeded. The other potential area we see with that could be problematic is the barrier islands and Long Island. If we have a breach there, we don't see any impacts that could happen that we're going to really affect life or limb based on a barrier island breach, but I think it'd be wise for all to follow the guidance that's been put out by the state in terms of actions to take for evacuation. For post-storm recovery operations, again, that's where we'll work, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers will work for FEMA, and we'll be able to quickly try to restore navigational projects and begin efforts to pre-storm levels. So we're also we have capabilities and contract mechanisms and assets that are in the area that can help with debris removal, infrastructure assessment, and there are several other things that would come through taskings from FEMA. If those things are required. So we're closely in contact with the state at the Emergency Operations Center in Albany and prepared to assist where necessary. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. First, let me begin by thanking Howard Glazer, the Director of State Operations, who has been coordinating this effort and been doing a great job. Colonel Paul Owens, who you just heard from, we thank you very much, and the Army Corps of Engineers for their cooperation and assistance. We're also joined by State Police Superintendent Joseph D'Amico, Major General Patrick Murphy, Captain Gordon Lobel from the Captain of the Port from the United States Coast Guard, Michael Moriarty, Deputy Administrator of FEMA, and Scott Reckler, who is Director of the Port Authority, and Joseph Loda, who is the Chairman and CEO of the MTA, as you know. First, let me report that yesterday we spent the day traveling the state, and we are very comfortable with the preparation that has been done all across the state. We're comfortable with the level of coordination between the state government and the local governments. We went as far as the Adirondacks yesterday, and people are prepared. We went through Hurricane Irene just a little while ago, and in a cruel irony, I think the frequency of the exposure has actually assisted us in getting prepared. So I think we've done everything that we need to do. And so far, as you've heard, the storm is as we predicted. There's going to be a lot of rain, and there's going to be a lot of wind, and that is proceeding. The question is the extent of the storm surge. It is already high. It's already at Irene levels. And the question is going to be, what level does the surge take us to later on this afternoon, later this evening, when it's actually high tide? And that's, if there's a possible area of concern, that is it. And that's what we are monitoring closely now. As an added precaution today, we are announcing that we are going to close the Holland Tunnel and the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel. Brooklyn Battery Tunnel, now renamed the UL Carey Tunnel, actually, at 2 o'clock today. Those tunnels are prone to flood, and as a precaution, we are going to be closing those tunnels at 2 o'clock today. The bridges at this point will remain open. They close at 60-mile-per-hour winds. Weather forecast suggests gusts up to 90 miles per hour, so people should keep an eye on that. This situation may be updated as we go throughout the day. We will also be calling up an additional 1,000 National Guards people. General Murphy is in charge of that. We called up 1,000 yesterday, and we're going to call up an additional 1,000 to make sure we have all the resources that we need to deal with the surge and any damage from the surge. Our current focus, as you heard, is on the surge and what the surge could mean. We've been working with the Coast Guard and the Army Corps of Engineers on that. We'll be redeploying all the naval equipment that we have in the state and local governments have in upstate New York. To the downstate area, New York City, Long Island, et cetera, to be of assistance if we need it. Rescue boats, military boats, state police boats, et cetera, will be moved downstate. We're also preparing for the power outages that we have been discussing. People wondered why we're suggesting that these may be prolonged power outages. After a disaster, hurricane, flood, etc., what normally happens is utility crews from other states come to the affected area. and you have an influx of crews, and that helps you do the repairs. Here there are so many states, potentially the entire eastern seaboard or the northern part, who are going to need assistance. There aren't enough crews to call in, and you're going to have states basically in competition for scarce resources. We have commitments of about 4,000 utility workers to come into the state at this time. Once we know where the damage is actually done, we can also redeploy within the state. In other words, if the power outages are more severe downstate, we can bring upstate resources to the assistance of downstate and vice versa. But we're preparing for that, and the additional National Guard will also be helpful with that. The federal cooperation, I believe, has been extraordinary, and I want to thank our federal partners. I worked in the federal government for 8 years at the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and I was basically on the other side of the table, on the federal side of the table. HUD would do just this, would respond in disasters. So I had a lot of experience during those 8 years. I never thought it would come in handy, but it wound up coming in handy. And I can tell you from that experience, this federal response has been extraordinary. I spoke with the president yesterday. He granted our disaster declaration for what they call a pre-landfall disaster declaration that allows us more flexibility and access to federal funds. So we couldn't be asking for anything else from our federal partners. I want to thank them for that. Again, as the situation changes, there'll be updates during the course of the day, and people should keep themselves informed. We've been very good at telling you about what government is doing and what government's responsibility is. Citizens have a duty in this, too. They need to be smart. They need to use common sense. Citizens do not need to be on the road. You really don't. You should leave the roads free. There are emergency vehicles on the roads. We need to be able to allow those emergency vehicles access. You do not need to be going to the beach to take pictures. You really don't. And don't be fooled. Don't look out the window and say, well, you know what, it doesn't look so bad. The worst is still coming. So keep yourself safe and use common sense. And also let me take this opportunity to thank all New Yorkers. As I mentioned, I was all across the state the past few days. And it never ceases to amaze me how New Yorkers are able to rise to the occasion. We are known for our courage and our toughness, but we also have a sense of community that is really inspirational. And it seems in our darkest hours is when New Yorkers shine the brightest. And you can see that again through this situation already. And it makes me proud to be a New Yorker. So thank all the partners who are here at the table today. Any questions, please feel free.
What are your biggest concerns with all of this in particular areas? And if it becomes as bad as you think it could
get? Well, first, it changes. You prepare. You do all the preparation that you can do. And then you actually see what cards you're dealt. We have done preparations statewide. If you remember with Hurricane Irene, all the projections were that the damage was going to be in downstate New York, Long Island, New York City. Turned out the exact opposite with Hurricane Irene. Damage downstate was minimal. Damage upstate was very bad. So now the projections are, once again, downstate is going to be affected, Long Island, Barrier Islands, and New York City on the storm surge. But we're still preparing statewide. The latest projections would suggest the storm surge could be problematic, flooding could be problematic, in the low-lying coastal areas, Long Island, New York City, and that's where we're focused, working with the Coast Guard now, Army Corps of Engineers, pumping capacity, et cetera.
Governor, when did you make the decision to close the tunnels, and what precipitated it? Was it the latest forecast? Was it the wind gusts?
The possible projections on the storm surge and the flooding are troublesome. And those two tunnels are prone to flooding in the first place, so that was an adjustment that we made today. And there may be more adjustments as the day goes on, right? As the conditions change, then you change your behavior.
Mentioned 60 miles an hour for the bridges. Is there a specific condition that would cause closure of the other tunnels, the Midtown Tunnel, the Lincoln Tunnel?
Let me ask Joseph Loda if he has... I want to respond to that.
The Midtown Tunnel is never closed for wind conditions before or flooding conditions. The Midtown Tunnel was made and taking that into account. However, if we believe that there's any flooding that's coming in at the 37th Street entrance or on the Queens side, we will, and we think that's going to happen, we will recommend to the governor that it close.
Governor, can you tell us whether there are any concerns about flooding subway stations?
Okay. Melissa, we're very concerned about the water surge in the Battery, where most of our lines go down and where the tunnels to Brooklyn go. So that is our one of our lowest lying areas, and that's exactly, you know, we've boarded them up. We've put up various different barriers to prevent the water from coming in. But that's my biggest concern. As the governor mentioned yesterday, our subway system and salt water do not mix very well together.
Governor, can you talk about what you saw at the World Trade Center site? Well, you know, we went down to the World Trade Center site this morning. Again, what's the issue of the hour is the storm surge and flooding and what could it mean? Joe just spoke to how it could be problematic for the subway system. Subway system and salt water especially do not mix. Fresh water is one thing, salt water is something else. One of the other concerns in Lower Manhattan would obviously be the World Trade Center site. It's still under construction, so you have the pit, as they call it, open. And we took a tour there with the people who are in charge. I think, you know, God bless them, that is the site of resilience and the site of can-do. And I believe they're prepared for it. They have thousands of sandbags that they're putting in. They have pumps in place. First order of business to keep water out of the site, and they believe they've done what they need to do that. If water does get in, they believe they have the pumping capacity. Again, the big question mark on these issues is how much water, right? It keeps coming back to that. Storm surge, how much water? You asked Joe Loda, have you made sure that the subways won't flood. You take every precaution you can take, but then how much water and where? And that's the great question. But I'm the experts at the World Trade Center site were confident this morning.
Howard Glazer, you mentioned earlier you were comparing Irene to the surge this time at the Tolan border. Could you do that again slowly?
Sure. We can also provide that information to you as well. The bottom line is that they're predicting about an 11.7-foot surge plus tide for this evening between around 8 and 9 p.m. That is almost probably a foot over where Irene was at a similar time. And just to give you the comparisons, you had about a 9.5-foot total surge in Irene. You're looking at a possible up to, depending on the predictions, 11.7-foot surge. Surge meaning all in, all of these weather factors all together at its peak time. And there are models that suggested that Irene was 6 inches to a foot away from much more serious flooding than we actually saw happen during that event. If you're on the Battery today and you're on the west side, you can see water starting to lap up a little bit on the west side of New York in particular right now.
And, you know, Jim, with all these things, you try to find the balance, right? You don't want to over-prepare because, first, it's costly. There are many obstructions for people. You close down business. You hurt the economy for a short period of time. So you don't want to over-prepare, but you really don't want to be under-prepared either. And, you know, when things go bad in a situation like this, they can go very bad. I was thinking back when I was on the federal side, Red River flood was one of the issues that we dealt with. I don't know if you were there at that time, Mike. The entire town was underwater. Hurricane Andrew, Homestead, Florida. You know, when it goes bad, it goes very bad. So prudence and err on the side of caution, but bring a sense of balance, and I think we brought that here.
Governor, yesterday you said you thought people might be dubious because of, you know, predictions last year with Irene, people evacuated. It turned out to be a bit of a bust in some people's minds. We're finding that is the case in some areas. A lot of people just stubbornly staying in their homes and the Rockaways and Cotton Gate, low-lying areas. What's your sense of the extent to which New Yorkers in Zone A in the city are actually following
the first, let's clarify what happened last time. Hurricane Irene was a bust. No, it wasn't. There was a tremendous amount of damage done by Hurricane Irene. Tremendous. The projection on where the damage was going to be was off. But that storm wreaked havoc in people's lives. You have people who are still building back from Hurricane Storm Irene to this day. We were in communities yesterday where they're still not fully recovered from Irene. And you go through the community and you see all signs of Irene. So anyone who says, well, they got it wrong with Irene, you're only half right. They got wrong the point of impact, but the impact was severe. So they didn't get it wrong, totally. Do not underestimate this storm. These forecasts for the surge are really extraordinary. And they're talking about surges that we have not seen before. So there is nothing at all to be taken lightly. We don't want people to panic. We don't want people to think we're not under control or we haven't done everything we need to do. But they need to do their part too. And if they are in an evacuation zone, evacuate. I have probably as much information on this storm as anyone. If I was in that area, I would evacuate, and I wouldn't think about it twice.
Governor, I'd like to also add, if I could, that, Hurricane Irene had dramatic effects on the New Jersey area, and because I know we've got a regional audience, I'd just like to say that the flooding that we think is happening and is potentially for happening in the Raritan River Basin and the Passaic River Basin are significant consequences from the storm that are very probable at this time, too. So even though we've talked primarily about the New York threats, there are significant threats to New Jersey in terms of the Raritan River Basin and the Passaic River Basin. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Karen. Jacob?
If you can just go into, like, in some more detail, if there is an 11-foot surge, what kind of flooding, more specifically, could New Yorkers expect in the pattern or
Jacob, it basically would be flooding in the Zone A, in the low-lying areas. If you had an extraordinary amount of water, first MTA, Joe Loda's point, you'd have salt water going into the subway system. It would go through the grates. It would enter the subway system, which is highly problematic for the subway system, the switches, et cetera, especially with the salt. But it depends on the extent, how much flooding, how many roads, how many homes, and it just goes by the extent of the flooding, by the extent of the surge. Anyone have any other comments that they would like to make? Joe, you want to speak to the horrors of salt water in the subway system?
Right. Well, first off, the governor, you mentioned the switches. The switches are really important for controlling the flow of the subway system. They could corrode quite easily. We're also, obviously, our signaling system. It's an electronic signaling system, and again, the corrosion that can come from there is significant. So the general ability to run the system and keep it safe is in jeopardy. I'm hoping that there is no salt water down in the system, that we've covered it up, but we've got the materials and the wherewithal necessary to repair whatever damage there is as quickly as possible.
Okay, my last point would just be to reiterate, please, citizens, they have a job to do here today also. Use common sense. You really do not need to be on the roads. Let the first responders do what they do. Listen to your TV. Get the updates for any change in conditions as we go through the day. And thank you all very much for taking the time to join us this morning.
We've been listening to a live update with Governor Cuomo and other New York State and federal officials. Significantly, we were told that storm surges are already reaching Hurricane Irene levels. And, of course, it's only just beginning. The governor announced the closure at 2 o'clock this afternoon of the Holland Tunnel and the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel, a.k.a. the Governor Hugh Carey Tunnel, because they are prone to flooding. The governor also announced the calling up of another 1,000 National Guard troops in addition to the 1,000 who were called up yesterday. The governor addressed the possibility of prolonged power outages after the storm. He said utility crews that would normally come in from elsewhere to help out after a local weather event are not as available because the storm is so widespread. Those crews are needed in their home regions or elsewhere in the Northeast. The governor was asked about a relatively high number of people choosing not to evacuate today, as we've been hearing on our phones, too, because Irene turned out to be not as bad as predicted in some locations. And the governor did not like that question. He emphasized that all they got wrong about Irene was where the heavy damage would be done. Now, Governor Christie is scheduled for a news conference in the noon hour, and we will carry that, too. Coming up in a minute, we'll take your calls for Sam Kelly from the Red Cross about what to do to keep yourself safe during the storm. For example, we'll answer an earlier caller's question about whether to keep windows cracked a bit because of the low pressure from the storm, or whether that's a bad idea because water can get in. And we'll take your questions, too, about what you should do and how to keep yourself safe. For Sam Kelly from the Red Cross, you can call in right now, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Brian Lehrer on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio as we continue to cover the arrival of Hurricane Sandy in our region. With us now to give you personal advice on what to do to keep yourself and your pets and your belongings safe is Sam Kelly, Communications Director for the Greater New York Red Cross. Sam, thank you for coming on with us. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And I'm going to go right to a caller who's going to ask the same question, I think, that I mentioned before the break. Glenn in Brooklyn, you're on the air. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Brian, and hi, I don't get the name, but thank you both for this public service. Very important. Red Cross person, I'm in Park Slope. My windows face west. It's an old building with old window frames. Should I crack open the windows at the bottom in order the wind not blow the window panes out?
No, it's actually a myth that's been around for a while. People think that it'll help reduce the pressure if you open the window during a storm like this. But actually what can happen is the wind comes in and it's looking for somewhere to escape, and it kind of gets channeled, and it can actually end up causing damage to your ceiling or the roof of your building. So the best thing to do is keep your windows completely closed. If you can, board them up. And during the storm itself, it's always best to be in an interior room without any windows.
Glenn, that answers that question, I hope. The scientists say, the meteorologists say, this is, however, the lowest pressure event that they have ever seen in the New York City area. That is, the barometric pressure, which is low during times of precipitation, is lower than they've ever seen it. Is that something that you can interpret?
Well, I'm not a meteorologist, obviously, and my focus is, and my job is really to make sure that people know things to do, that they can be prepared, and, of course, helping people who are in our shelters, who are evacuating, things like that. But with a storm like this, as we just heard during the governor's press conference, this is a very serious storm. People really need to be paying attention to it. They need to be listening to the radio, watching television, and they need to make sure that they're safe within their their home and not creating even bigger of a disaster.
Absolutely. So we've been hearing that people in what they call Zone A in New York City are supposed to evacuate. Those are the areas right by the water. Here's a question from Chris, who I think lives in Zone B, which would be the next one out. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to check. I'm one block up from Zone A, and I'm looking out the window at the FDR Drive, and it looks like the water is rising quite substantially already. My concern is that I don't have a portable radio, and if the power goes out, how would I know whether to evacuate?
Uh-huh.
The New York Times said something about a tsunami-like effect, which sort of freaked me out this morning. So I'm curious as to what one should do.
How high up do you live in your building?
I'm on the lower floor. I'm on the fourth floor. There's the gym below me, and then it's just the building itself. I'm on the first, basically, level of apartments.
Uh-huh. On First Avenue in the 30s, right?
Yeah, close to the FDR Drive, so not on First Avenue, more towards FDR. So I'm close to the water.
Okay. Any advice for Chris, Sam, Kelly?
Well, I think right now, while she still has power, one of the things she can do is make a phone call to 311. You know, it's a great resource for all New Yorkers to call to find out information as to what the city's doing and what its plans will be, you know, if this goes beyond something that they need to do more with Zone B. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, City Office of Emergency Management makes those type of decisions, but it's really important for New Yorkers. They can go visit the city's website, nyc.gov/OEM, to get preparedness information,
right,
and, of course, call 311.
And the other thing, Chris, is just to stay in touch with your neighbors. If you don't have a portable radio and your phone goes out, and, you know, we're not expecting power outages in that area, I don't think. Since the power lines are underground, it would be much less likely than in areas that are not in Manhattan. But if it happens, stay in touch with your neighbors, too, and that would probably be the best advice that I could give. Joy in the Bronx, you're on the air. Hi, Joy.
Hi. I hope everybody donates because we know that we're all listening to you right now.
Thank
my
you.
Question is about water, having water in high-rise buildings. My girlfriend and I had a long discussion that after the eighth floor, there isn't enough pressure in the system to push it up. And if there is no power, how do they get water above the eighth floor?
That is a real concern, and that's one of the reasons that they recommend that people fill up your bathtubs in the event that power goes out so that you'll be able to use that water to flush your toilets and for other purposes. Anything to add to that, Sam?
Well, I would say you can also, besides filling up that bathtub, fill up any kind of jugs, water bottles, everything else you have right now, you know, while the water is still good and fresh. You know, we always think about going and buying bottled waters at the store, which is fine to do as well. But right now is a good time to go ahead and start filling up everything you can, especially if you are in a high-rise building, because just as you and the caller were talking about, that is a real concern. If the power goes out, that you lose that pressure getting up into those upper levels. And, of course, one thing people can always do is, you know, if you have family or loved ones who live in a lower level and they're not in an area that's going to flood, think about, you know, spending a day or two with them, you know, make a visit out of it. You know, it may be a little bit uncomfortable, but it'll be a lot more comfortable than being in a building that doesn't have water doesn't have power.
And it's getting a little late. We're on the border of that being a good idea to move out of your area now and it being a bad idea to travel. Depending on where you are, it could still be a good idea. One quick question coming in via our Twitter feed, Jonathan asks about air conditioning units still in windows around the city. It's probably a little late to do anything about this for many people, but do they pose a risk?
Well, yes, they can pose a risk, and if it's a type of, you know, it's an air conditioner you put in yourself, and you can go ahead and take it out. It's that time of year anyways.
Is it the risk of it blowing out of the window or that it's not airtight?
Well, obviously it's not going to be as airtight, but anything, you know, people also need to think about if they have satellite dishes, antennas that are outside of their windows, et cetera, as well, to try to secure them. Because anything that obviously isn't, you know, concreted, you know, and tied down could, if it gets loosened up, become a potential missile that could, right, you know, go through a window or, God forbid, hit somebody on the street.
Good advice of various kinds from Sam Kelly, Communications Director for the Red Cross of Greater New York. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And this is special coverage of Hurricane Sandy on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. I'm Brian Lehrer, along with WNYC's Richard Hake and David First from New Jersey Public Radio. Richard, what's the latest?
Well, I can tell you right now that the readings just came in from Central Park. Winds are gusting there up to 35 miles per hour. At Kennedy Airport, 44 miles per hour. At LaGuardia, 48 miles per hour. So as we can see, as this storm moves closer, conditions begin to deteriorate here in the area. We just heard a little while ago from Governor Andrew Cuomo. His big news there was that the Holland Tunnel and the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel, renamed the Hugh L. Carey Tunnel, will be closed starting at 2 o'clock this afternoon.
The possible projections on the storm surge and the flooding are troublesome, and those two tunnels are prone to flooding in the first place, so that was an adjustment that we made today.
And the governor says other bridges and tunnels could be closed based on changing conditions. He's also warning about the subway is actually water going into some of the subway systems. Again, the MTA has suspended all service, so there's no passengers on there. But again, that's a big concern as the storm moves in.
And in that news conference, Joe Loda, the MTA chairman, answered a question about salt intrusion into the subways from the flooding and whether that might damage the equipment in a way that would prevent a quick return to service. And he said he hopes that there is not any saltwater damage, and certainly any widespread saltwater damage. What they've been saying all along is that once the storm recedes, subway service would resume about 12 hours after that. And Richard, one of the questions that I have that I don't know has been answered yet is what's considered the end of the storm? Because
right.
it's expected to gradually rain less and gradually have dying down winds over a period of a couple of days after tomorrow.
Yeah, this storm is actually supposed to, it's moving quite quickly right now, up to about 20 miles per hour. But as soon as it hits landfall somewhere along the mid-Jersey coastline, actually the latest track has it just over Cape May, New Jersey, and it makes this turn, it is expected to kind of stall and sit here for a couple of days.
And one of the variables that we're watching is if the storm hits the coast before high tide, which would be before around 8 or 9 o'clock tonight, that would be good. Impact at high tide would make the storm surges that much worse, certainly in Jersey along the shore where it's going to actually impact, but also because the storm surge continues quite a bit to the north in Long Island and elsewhere. David First from New Jersey Public Radio, what's the latest you're hearing?
We're continuing to see some effects of the storm. Atlantic City's public safety director says most of the city is underwater. Willie Glass says the city is basically flooded. It looks like the damage will be worse
wow.
than the storm of 1962.
Wow.
Major event from March 8, 1962. Fire officials in Pleasantville report at least two rescues from homes surrounded by water. Two more rescues underway. As we've been hearing, State Emergency Management spokeswoman Mary Gapfert says officials asked about 115,000 residents to evacuate the state's barrier islands. It is not known how many heeded the warning. But certainly when we're hearing about Atlantic City being mostly underwater, it's a very serious deal right now. The rain and wind picking up in Monmouth County. Sheriff Sean Golden says waves have reached up to the boardwalk in Belmar and Long Branch. The road is closed between Monmouth Beach and Seabright because of flooding. Golden says many county residents are heeding warnings to stay off the roads.
And Brian, the National Weather Service issues these readings or the track of the hurricane every 3 hours. And we just received an update at 11 o'clock, and we just got it from the Associated Press. And this storm has picked up strength a little bit. It's making its turn toward the projected landfall on or near the southern coast of New Jersey. But the National Hurricane Center says the storm's top sustained winds have risen up to near 90 miles per hour
wow.
with higher gusts. The storm center right now, 260 miles south-southeast of New York City, and again expected to make landfall tonight just along the southern New Jersey coastline. And those figures are just from a few minutes ago.
Did you say sustained winds of 90 miles an hour?
Sustained winds with higher gusts, yes.
So that is a hurricane. There's no question that Sandy is still a hurricane at this time as it heads our way.
Absolutely. And the ports of the port of New York and New Jersey is closed to all incoming and outgoing vessel traffic. Condition Zulu was declared for all commercial waterways effective at 7 o'clock this morning. The Garden State Parkway is still closed in both directions south of Exit 38 because of flooding, and we may see more closings coming.
And I have some road closures here in New York if you're interested. All lanes of the FDR northbound closed from East 60th Street to East 125th Street. This due to flooding. All lanes are closed due to flooding on the Major Deegan south of the McCombs Dam Bridge, and all lanes are closed due to flooding on the Hutchinson River Parkway in Westchester.
And also joining us now is New Jersey Public Radio Managing Editor Nancy Solomon, who I understand is on the Garden State Parkway. Hi, Nancy. Where are you exactly?
I am on an overpass looking at the parkway. I'm sitting in my car because I think if I were standing outside, you wouldn't be able to understand me because the wind is whipping so hard. But I have a full view in both directions of the parkway, and believe it or not, there are still people out there driving.
Now, you're north, I gather, of the area that was just reported to be closed. Go ahead.
Yes, quite a bit north. So the Garden State Parkway is closed south of Exit 38. That's Egg Harbor. That's down at the shore, and it's closed all the way down to Cape May. Of course, you know, the flooding has already begun on the southern parts of the coast. We're getting reports from reporters and bloggers all up and down the coastline that, for instance, Ocean City, the bay and the ocean have now met. That's from a Newsworks reporter, Jen Miller. So they're seeing water already has come over the seawall. Houses are already underwater on the southern parts of the Jersey Shore. The Garden State Parkway, which goes down to the shore, is closed on that end. On this end, it's open. Governor Christie is holding a press conference, 12:15, I believe. And
which we will carry live.
Yes, and I would be very surprised if he does not close the turnpike and the parkway. Connecticut has already closed their highways.
And we heard from Governor Cuomo in his news conference about a half hour ago that the surge levels, the storm surge levels, the water levels in general are already as high as they were at the peak of Hurricane Irene. And obviously, this is just beginning. From what you're describing, things may already even be worse than Irene.
Yeah, I think down at the shore, certainly we're right now. I mean, it hasn't even hit full force yet, and I think things are looking worse. And I'm trying to get updates, but. And, you know, and here in northern Jersey, we're still a far ways off from getting the storm, and it's very, very gusty. I mean, I'm right at my comfort level of, if it's like this, I'll be here a little bit more wind. I'm heading indoors, and I'm not stepping foot outside.
And just to give you an example, everybody, of how conditions are variable depending on where you are, and remember that was so much the case during Irene. There were people saying, oh, this is no big deal, it was overhyped, and other people in the meantime were getting absolutely socked, especially inland in that case. We've been hearing about Atlantic City, some of the other regions, but here calling in is William in South Orange. William, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. South Orange, the winds are definitely worse than they were during Irene, and we're being told that they're going to get a lot worse tonight. Another comment which I thought just might be of interest to the correspondent you have on is Mayor Bloomberg has yet to excuse the employees from coming into work either today or tomorrow. So in doing so, he's either saying show up to work or lose a vacation day, which I think is a little bit ironic in light of evacuations being ordered and mass transit being shut down. It seems the easiest thing for him to do to keep people off the roads would be don't come to work if you're a non-essential employee.
William, thank you for that. We're getting a number of calls and comments and tweets to that effect, and it is surprising. I know a lot of agencies are telling all non-essential personnel not to come to work, and we're going to try to get a confirmation on that, whether Mayor Bloomberg is actually telling people who are not coming in today, whether they can't get there or whether they're told not to come in, that they'll be charged a vacation day. The mayor is scheduled to hold a news conference at 11:30, so that's only 16 minutes from right now. I'm sure he will be asked that question because, William, you're not the only one chiming in with that concern here this morning. And, of course, there are the many emergency situations that the mayor will also have to update. Richard, are we still expecting that at 11:30 from the mayor?
Last we heard, the mayor will speak at 11:30. Hopefully he will address some of those issues. I'm also getting information here from the Associated Press that additional inspectors are being sent to the nuclear power plants in five states as this storm approaches. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission says its headquarters and Northeast regional offices are both closed except for emergency personnel, but they are stationing inspectors including these nuclear power plants, including Indian Point, which is here just outside of New York City.
That would be an interesting place to check in with Indian Point itself and see what Entergy is saying, the owner of Indian Point, because we know in the Japan situation, and I'm not comparing this to that, but it was the storm surge from the tsunami that followed the earthquake that caused the damage, mm-hmm. that caused the meltdown. Now, I don't think the Hudson River could surge that much to create an analogous situation, but it is on the Hudson, and this is a question that should be asked of the owners of Indian Point. David first.
And down on the Jersey Shore, the Oyster Creek facility near Forked River is of the same vintage as the site in Japan that had all the difficulties. It's from the exact same time period, so something to watch.
And that's also on the list that I'm looking here on that will get an additional inspector, Oyster Creek.
Also joining us now is WNYC's Steve Nesson, who's in South Brooklyn. Hi, Steve. Where are you exactly?
Hi, Brian. I'm on Brighton Beach Avenue, just one block away from the ocean. I can almost see it from where I am right now. And it's a busy day here. People are going about their business, shopping, walking dogs, going to the beach. I've seen people jogging on the boardwalk here.
So people are not believing the warnings. People are macho. What's the cause of this?
I've heard a little bit of both from people down here. Some people don't believe it's going to get that bad. Some people point to the weather right now and say, look, it's not that bad. And the truth is it's not even raining very hard right now. And the wind isn't that strong here. There are some gusts, but that's one thing people are saying. Some people say it wasn't that bad during Irene. So they're going to stick it out and see how bad it does get here.
You know, one of the things that all the officials have been saying, I'm not sure Governor Cuomo quite put it this way, but some of the others have, is think about the emergency responders. Think about the police officers and firefighters and EMT officials who may have to come and get you and the danger that they would be put in if you don't evacuate and then you need a rescue. Anybody talking about that?
I have not heard that concern mentioned. I did ask, what are you going to do if the water rises and you can't get out of your apartment? Some people say, well, we'll be fine. We'll be fine. A lot of Russian immigrants here. One guy said he was tough. He's from Russia, so he's tough. He can handle it. A little bravado, but I'm not sure what they're going to do. There are provisions. A lot of the shops are open, and they are doing brisk business today as well.
Thank you, Steve Nesson in Brighton Beach. David first from New Jersey Public Radio. You're laughing. I guess there's Moscow tough and there's Asbury Park tough, huh?
Well, yes. And even with the eye of the storm projected to go over Cape May County and Salem County in southern New Jersey, according to there was an article in the Star Ledger this morning that there's this group in Salem County and nothing is going to get between them and their breakfast club assignment. They have beer every morning. And this group of about six retirees meets most mornings for a few drinks at Scooter's Bar and Grill in Pennsville Township. Today was no different. Nothing is going to stop their regular routine. I should mention, too, that New Jersey's Office of Emergency Management advises residents that NJ211 is handling general information calls regarding Hurricane Sandy. You can call 211 for general Sandy information. 911 should be used for emergency assistance only.
WNYC's Richard Hake, New Jersey Public Radio's David First. We'll keep checking in with you.
We'll keep watching.
We are expecting Mayor Bloomberg to hold a news conference at 11:30, Governor Christie around 12:15. We'll bring you both of those live. When we continue in a minute, we'll talk to a meteorologist about the actual weather, and we'll talk to another emergency preparedness official about what you can do to keep yourself safe. Stay with us. Uh-huh. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we continue to cover Hurricane Sandy approaching and beginning to hit our area. Let's go back to Adam Sobel, professor of climate and atmospheric sciences at Columbia University. Professor Sobel, thanks for coming back on with us. And we had just gotten a report that the hurricane at this moment in the Atlantic has sustained winds of 90 miles an hour. Does that mean it's strengthening even now?
Yes, that appears to be the case. Yes, it appears to be strengthening, and sea level pressure well below 950 millibars at the center, which is extremely deep, low, extremely powerful storm.
What's a millibar?
Right. It's a measure of pressure, so I can't do the conversion to inches right away, but our normal pressure is a little above 1,000 at sea level, and, so it's low. The pressure is quite low. It's consistent with that report of wind that you just described, given that the storm is very large. For the same pressure, a larger storm has somewhat weaker winds, but this one has low pressure and strong winds despite its large size.
Talk more about that low pressure and what it means. I've heard some reports that this is the lowest barometric pressure. 27.94 inches is one reading that I heard, which rivals the pressure of the 1938 hurricane, which was the worst to ever affect our area, at least until now. We'll see if the actual impact of the storm rivals that. But 27.94 inches, how low is that in barometric pressure terms, and what does it actually mean?
In terms of how low is that? Well, again, our normal pressure is about – it's easier for me to do it in millibars. I have trouble with inches or hectopascals, the same as a millibar. So if our normal pressure is 1,000, a little over 1,000, and we're down to 942, that's, 60 out of 1,000. That's the drop in air pressure. So it's not that much. If you climb a small – go on a hike up a small mountain, your pressure would drop by just as much. So the pressure itself has a small effect on the storm surge because it's a little less pressure pushing down at the ocean, so the water has a chance to rise a little bit. But the main thing about the pressure is it's in some ways just a proxy for the wind, because the wind blows because of the pressure difference between the center of the storm and the environment. So if the center is 60 millibars or 60 hectopascals less than the environment, then that strong pressure gradient drives a wind. And if the system weren't rotating and if the Earth weren't rotating, the wind would just flow into the center of the low pressure and fill it up, and the low pressure wouldn't last for long. But because of the spin, the wind blows around the low pressure, and the deeper the low pressure is, the stronger the winds are for a given size of the storm. So this one, I think the peak winds, again, are because of the larger size, even if the pressure ends up being similar to 38, the winds at the peak probably won't be as strong, but they'll be over a larger area. And so, for the city, as we discussed earlier, I think that might be worse because of the direction of the winds and the storm surge.
Each time you're on, some of our listeners chime in on the phones or online that they want me to ask you, if we've had Hurricane Irene, which was a rare event, and then this the very next year, and this is such a rare event the way it's shaping up, is this just weather, or is this a reflection of change in the climate?
Gosh, it's so hard to say. I think with this event and with Irene, what made them unusual was the fact that we got them here. If these storms had gone out to sea, it wouldn't have been anything that strikingly different than other years. This has been an active hurricane season, definitely. With Sandy and now Tony, that's somewhere out in the Atlantic, we're up to, I think it's 20 named storms, which is definitely an active season by historic standards, but it's not extraordinary in the way that, for example, 2005 was, when we had Katrina and Rita and all those. So, I think what's really unusual is the fact that we're getting them here in the New York metro area, and that really has to do with the track and the steering flow. And with a sample of two storms, even though it does seem an extraordinarily anomalous period of a couple of years for our region, it's very difficult to associate that with a larger scale climate. It doesn't mean that there isn't any relationship there, and that there isn't any larger scale factor that has to do with the climate changing. But I think it's it's very difficult to make those associations just from two events, and we need a lot more research to be able to pin it down better, whether we might expect to see more like this in the future.
Adam Sobel, Professor of Climate and Atmospheric Sciences at Columbia University, thanks again.
Pleasure.
Again, some of the things that Governor Cuomo announced in his news conference a little while ago, the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel, which is currently open, and the Holland Tunnel, which is currently open, will close at 2 o'clock because of Hurricane Sandy. Other closures could come at any time. And, of course, they would prefer that you stay off the roads unless you absolutely have to travel. There are closures all over the area because of flooding, as you've heard earlier this hour in parts of New York City, on parts of the FDR Drive, parts of the Garden State Parkway, too many to list, frankly. But you can expect the highways that are near any body of water to become increasingly impassable as time goes on. Joining us now is George Contreras. He is an adjunct professor at Metropolitan College in the Emergency Disaster Program. Professor Contreras, welcome back to WNYC. Hello.
Good afternoon, Brian. How are you?
I'm good. Are you tracking a particular aspect of emergency preparedness? I want to give you a lot of leeway in where to start.
Well, the thing that we're most concerned right now is that we want to make sure that the citizens of the areas that are affected actually listen to the advisories that are going out there, especially those where mandatory evacuations have been implemented. We want to make sure that those residents have moved out, particularly because we don't want to endanger the lives of any particular emergency responders, such as the police department, fire department, but also EMTs and paramedics that are out there working and trying to do the job the 911 system is doing in New York City. We want to make sure that those lives aren't put in danger because of people who haven't left, especially during a mandatory evacuation.
One question that we've gotten is about safe generator use. We know that a lot of stores sold a lot of generators in the last few days, and people are buying them but often don't know how to use them. Do you recommend anything with respect to first-time generator users?
Well, the first thing I would recommend for people who are using generators is to make sure that they get one that will be able to sustain all the appliances that they want to operate at the time. And if they haven't used a generator ever before, they really need to take the time to read the operator's manual, because it can be a little bit daunting to look at how the operation of a generator will function. So I think it's very important to people to take the time and read it and to make sure they don't overload it, and then they're going to have a problem with the generator. But for those who are staying at home, I really have to say, you know, now they still have some time to go out and get some supplies if there's any left at the supermarkets or grocery stores or any place like that, because later in the evening it's really going to come down really hard. And the thing that distinguishes this particular event from Hurricane Irene is the fact that this is going to last a lot longer than we saw last year. So, the current predictions are for 36 to 48 hours. You know, the schools are closed today. They most likely are going to be closed tomorrow because MTAs are going to be closed. So kids are going to be staying home as well. Some other facilities and employers will probably also be closed. So people are going to be staying home today and most very likely tomorrow, so they need to make sure they're prepared to shelter in place. And if people have to leave their homes, there are over 76 shelters that have been opened up by the city, and if they need to know where they are, they can go to 311 and get some information as to the closest one to where they are.
Absolutely. Well, Mayor Bloomberg is expected to begin an update and a news conference any minute now. In the meantime, while we're waiting for the mayor, we can take some phone calls with your questions for emergency preparedness expert George Contreras, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Marcos in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, yeah, I was just talking to my if I just look out my kitchen window, there's a Dish Network mini satellite dish, and it's already been moving back and forth in the wind. I think the super's going to try to screw it in a little better, but I'm just wondering about that, if that's likely to be a hazard, if you know what the if they could guess what the wind threshold those are safe up till is, yeah, and what can be done about,
yeah,
it.
I think if you already see 20 right now, we haven't really even received the stronger winds that are coming later on this evening and tomorrow. So if he should, he can take those off, I would highly recommend anything that's potentially not secured to a building or something like that should be removed. Air conditioners that are not secured really properly into their windows should probably be removed just for safety. You don't want anything like that that could potentially become an object that's going to fall down and possibly hit somebody.
Braxton in Astoria, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I just had a question about whether we should put big duct tape X's on our windows to keep them from shattering as much.
Yeah, FEMA, the official word from FEMA is that putting the tight X's on windows really hasn't been very helpful. I still see them a lot as I drive throughout New York City and other places, but FEMA has official recommendations that it really doesn't help anymore. It can actually be a little bit more harmful. So I have seen them, but at this point, FEMA doesn't recommend that you put X's and tapes on windows anymore.
Does it depend?
You should make sure you don't stand in front of them or anything like that, or have any kids playing around windows, you know, that's probably the most useful thing for you.
Does it depend on how modern the windows are? I know the current generation of windows, safety glass and other things that they use are, you know, if it's double-paned, it's less prone to shattering. I've heard and read that modern windows are made so that they don't shatter into sharp shards anymore and tend to fly in. You know, even if some object like a satellite dish should happen to come loose and smash into the windows. But I don't know how accurate that is for every single window.
Right. The thing also to remember is that people may not know exactly when those windows were installed or manufactured. So, you know, people are not going to be able to determine probably off the top of their head when those windows were made and if they actually comply with any new standards in terms of wind resistance and things like that.
And again, a windows question that had come up earlier in the show, and that is whether with the extreme low pressure we were just hearing about from our weather expert, whether it's a good idea to keep the windows cracked just a little bit to equalize the pressure, or whether that's a bad idea because you're going to suffer more from the water intrusion.
Really, the concern there is actually that the rain might actually get into your house, so you don't really necessarily want to do that. So I would say keep the windows closed. And just make sure you're not next to the window in case something does come through your window and you're going to get hit by the window and the objects as well.
What's the most important thing if the power goes out, or to prepare for the possibility that the power might go out?
The most important thing to prepare for anyone who is at home, whether it's in a building or in a house, is to make sure you have what you need to, you know, survive it for the next couple of days. Like I said, the MTA is not going to be working today, most likely tomorrow. So as we heard, they're not going to restore service until 12 hours after the storm has passed. So that puts us already into Tuesday afternoon. So in order for everything to come back up, it'll probably be into Wednesday by the time everything comes back to normal, if it moves along the path. So I think people need to take all the measures they can to have supplies at home, have enough water, have foods that you don't have to necessarily need electricity to prepare, have food and treats for the children. If you have pets, make sure you take any measures to take care that you have food for your pets. But pretty much, you know, have things that if your power does go out, that you can still stay at home and not have to worry about going outside and putting yourself in danger by going outside into high winds and the heavy rain.
Edith in Rockaway Park, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello.
How are you,
Brian,
Edith?
Brian, I'm having a lot of problems. I evacuated. I listened to the mayor yesterday.
Uh-huh.
I went to a center that I had gone to with Hurricane Irene. And they had supplies. There were no beds, there were no blankets, there was no cage for the animal, and no food. And what can I say? I'm handicapped. I walked in with a walker and all these supplies. Now, the staff was very helpful, and they kept on calling, and they kept on getting refused. And I wasn't the only one there. There were some women there who had gone to another evacuation center with Hurricane Irene, and they wouldn't go back to that center because there was so much violence there.
There was violence there. And Edith, let me understand.
I think it was John Adams High School that they had problems.
Uh-huh. Let me understand your situation. You went to a place that
is... It was PS 108,
okay.
Queens.
And it is listed as a shelter for this storm?
It was the one I had gone to before.
And did they tell you that that is a shelter?
And they were all set up. They had the staff there. They were just waiting for the supplies, and they couldn't get the supplies.
I see. So you went to a shelter, but there was no bed.
And they kept on giving me instructions to go to another center. Well, I couldn't fool around, you know.
Yeah.
This is very arduous for me because I'm handicapped.
I understand. And you said you need a walker to walk around. Professor Contreras, do you have any advice for Edith?
Well, I'm sorry that he had that bad experience. Unfortunately, you know, I don't know exactly any details about that shelter. But, you know, under those circumstances, I know it's very difficult for him to go to another one, but that it might probably be in his best interest if he has some special needs.
For her, for Edith.
And I hear that the staff has been a little bit doing their best they can, but as you can imagine, opening up about 76 shelters throughout the city.
Mayor Bloomberg is beginning his news conference. We go live to City Hall.
Joined by the council speaker. She's about to come in, and the police commissioner as well.
Nope, not quite yet. He's taking his place at the podium. There are various people arrayed behind him, other city officials. We see, I think that's Police Commissioner Kelly. I think I see Christine Quinn there. Dennis Walcott, the school's chancellor, is standing behind the mayor. And here he goes.
Senator Charles Schumer and Council Speaker Christine Quinn and our city key city commissioners. And I wanted to once again thank Linda Calise for her signing. Let me begin today by updating everybody on current weather conditions and what we can expect from Hurricane Sandy over the next 2 days. We continue to remain in touch with Governor Cuomo and state officials in coordinating our response to this storm, and I'm also announcing right now that we avoided city public schools to remain closed tomorrow. There's no chance that the mass transit will be back in time to serve people, and they're always worried about cleanup, even though the storm should abate dramatically as we get into Tuesday. The current track provided by the National Hurricane Center shows Sandy making landfall just south of Atlantic City this evening, and that keeps New York City well within the danger zone of the storm, and it's why, as of now, we are under a coastal flood warning from now through 3 p.m. on Tuesday, and high wind warning through 6 p.m. tomorrow. This is a massive storm. Hurricane force winds extend some 175 miles in every direction of this center. The storm may strengthen as it meets the cold front approaching from the northwest, and that's when it changes from a tropical storm to a northeaster, which has very big implications for those areas to the west of us and to the north of us. As we've emphasized all along, the greatest danger posed by Sandy is the coastal storm surge it will produce. We've already had as much flooding, for example, along the FDR, which is fundamentally closed at the moment, as we did in Hurricane Irene. Now, when we close a road, we close it when the water comes up, and if the water recedes, as, for example, as you go from a high tide to a low tide period, we would reopen that. But at any moment, any of these roads, if it becomes unsafe, we close it. And we have lots of people watching. The flooding that could occur later today is why we ordered our evacuation from Zone A areas. Yesterday, last night, there was a high tide. Tonight, there's a much bigger one. Tomorrow, another one. Water levels along our coast and in our waterways have begun rising and are expected to remain at higher than normal levels for the next 24 hours. The surge will be roughly at 8 o'clock tonight, 8:15, plus or minus a couple of hours. But remember, if you're in the South Bronx, the surge that you're getting is surge that enters Long Island Sound from out around Montauk, and it takes about 4 hours to get down here. So the surge that you would experience there is much later than the surge that you'd experience if the water is coming up the East River and the Hudson River. There has been some flooding already in the Bowery, as well as the FDR and some of the Rockaways. We expect surge levels of 6 to 11 feet. A surge of 9 to 10 feet is possible along Coney Island and the Rockaways, and a surge of 11 to 12 feet may occur at the Battery Monday evening. Maximum surge impact in these areas is expected to be in some period plus or minus 2 hours around 8:15, so say 6 to 10:30. The peak surge will hit areas along Long Island Sound between 10 and 2 a.m., as I said, 4 hours later. Now, if you live on a coastline, you have to add to that breaking waves, waves of 15 to 20 feet along the ocean-facing shoreline will result in severe beach erosion, but also it drives some water right over the roads and inland more. Because of the heavy rains that we do expect, which will come in later tonight, after the first we'll see higher winds, then we'll see the surge, then we'll see more rain. Tomorrow morning we expect to be very wet. A high wind warning is now in effect. The heaviest winds will occur this afternoon and this evening. Sustained winds of 40 to 55 miles an hour with gusts of 70 to 80 are what's forecast at the moment. And motorists should experience extreme caution. We will monitor conditions on the bridges. Governor Cuomo has announced that at 2 p.m. today, the Hugh Carey Brooklyn Battery Tunnel and the Harland Tunnel will be closed to traffic. The Bronx River Parkway and the westbound lanes of the Guttles Bridge, have been closed, and more bridge and tunnel closings throughout the city are very possible. Gothels Bridge. Yesterday, I ordered an evacuation of residents and businesses in the area designated as Zone A in our coastal flood plan. So let me reiterate what I said yesterday just for everybody's safety. And it's also for the safety of the first responders who might have to rescue people who remain in Zone A and whose own lives could be put at risk because of that. If you are still in Zone A and can find a way to leave, leave immediately. Conditions are deteriorating very rapidly, and the window for you getting out safely is closing. As the winds start building this afternoon, it gets more and more dangerous to go outside. And so you're sort of caught between a rock and a hard place. You should have left, but it's also getting to be too late to leave. If you really experience an emergency, 911, we will send our first responders in, although we'd love very much not to have to put their lives at risk, and you can control that by getting out now. You can look outside and say, oh, this is not bad. That's correct, but it is going to be. The forecasts are reasonably accurate, this close to when we're predicting something, and it's going to be very high winds, going to be a lot of road closures. You know, mass transit's not working, and driving when you have big gusts like that is dangerous. Overnight, city EMS crews transported 13 homebound elderly from Zone A residences. Plans were also put in effect to transport residents of city homeless shelters in Zone A, and an increased effort is being made to reach homeless on the streets with a focus on those in Zone A. Manhattan Veterans Affairs Hospital and New York Downtown Hospital have been fully evacuated, incidentally. Some 45,000 of the 375,000 New Yorkers who live in Zone A are residents of city public housing developments. We continue to make enormous efforts to reach them with a message that they need to leave for their own safety. If you are in one of these 26 affected developments, the city is running buses for the next hour or so, but that's going to stop because it just becomes too dangerous to run the buses. If you are still in a public housing development, you should go downstairs. The buses are in the same locations they were yesterday. We've placed flyers in all 26 of the affected developments starting last Friday. We had meetings with residents last Saturday. We started knocking on doors of residents in the affected developments Friday and Saturday, and that continued yesterday. We've knocked on every door in the affected developments. We've made phone calls to apartments in every development. If we couldn't reach people, we put flyers under their doors. Sunday, police officers were at the developments telling people through loudspeakers to evacuate. We provided school buses to transport people to shelters, and that is still going on. And we're especially going to residents we know are on respirators or other life-saving equipment dependent on electricity and telling them to leave and helping them to do so. I did want to commend the elected officials who worked with NYCHA this weekend in going door to door with the message to evacuate, and particularly to John Rea and all his staff at NYCHA. I don't think anybody could have done more to give people the notice and advice to protect how to protect themselves. We stressed all along that for people living in Zone A, the first option should be finding a safe place to stay with relatives or friends. However, we have also opened 76 emergency shelters in city public schools for those who did not have that option. They are still accepting people. All of these shelters have at least one entrance usable for wheelchairs. If you require further information, you can call 311 or visit the OEM website through nyc.gov or the website of the mayor's office for people with disabilities, which will provide information about accessibility. We have done everything I think that we can to give you the information that you need. The shelters are fully stocked. We've got volunteers, a lot of teachers who've been there overnight. I visited one yesterday. They have shelter. They have cots. They have blankets. They have food. They have sanitary facilities. And they can even take your pets. So far, we've had about 3,000 people come into the shelters, and if the press wants to know the number of pets, I think it was in the low 70s, 73 pets. But don't leave your pet at home because you don't know when you can get back, so take your pet with you. For the next several days, we've been stressing what precautionary steps New Yorkers should take. Our message to all New Yorkers is pretty much the same today. The storm is here and will be here for the rest of today and well into tomorrow. Now you should concentrate on keeping yourselves and your families safe to the extent possible. Remain in your homes while the storm is in progress. If you live in buildings served by elevators, avoid using them during the storm. There's always the possibility of power outages, and you might get caught between floors. Stay away from picture windows or lobbies where glass could be shattered by windborne objects. Most of the glass is able to stand up to the gusts, but if something is blown into them, then they could easily shatter and you couldn't be hit with the glass or the object that caused the accident in the beginning. We have worked very hard to make sure all cranes and construction sites are battered down, and we've had so far no indication of any debris blowing off a construction site. But as the winds get worse, our precautions get tested more, and you never know. There's no reason to jeopardize your lives. It's just dangerous to be out on the streets when the wind is this high. If you have to be, you can do it. But take precautions. You just stay away from windows when you're inside, outside. Keep your eyes and ears open and get your business done and get back inside as quickly as you can. And remember that on the higher floors of high-rise buildings, the wind is much stronger. So the further up you live, the more reason you should close your drapes and just stay away from windows. With regard to city employees, as I've said, city government is open for business today. That's what we're here to do, to serve New Yorkers. When others need help, we've got to be there. To all city workers with operational duties related to Hurricane Sandy, you know your assignments and what you should, and you should be executing them. And thank you for your dedication. That's why you go to work for New York City, to help others. We've asked a number of city school teachers to volunteer at the evacuation centers. However, conditions are dangerous, and in light of the predicted impact of the storm to people's ability to get home tonight, I've instructed commissioners that they are to use their judgment to determine if employees are not involved in response or shelter operations and have gotten done the stuff that had to get done today. Then there's no reason why you can't commissioners can make their own decisions, but they could let them leave work early to get home. But let me be clear, city government is open, and though these are the times when New Yorkers need us the most, we do want to have everybody safe and not inconvenience anybody more than necessary, but we understand why we're here. To give you some examples of what city workers are doing today, sanitation workers have already picked up thousands of tons of refuse this morning. They will be on 12-hour shifts tomorrow to pick up refuse where possible and also to help removing debris created by storms. Park employees are handling calls about, for example, hanging limbs and down trees. Employees of the Department of Environmental Protection are cleaning catch basins and staffing wastewater treatment plants, dealing with instances of highway flooding and repairing water main breaks. The City Human Resources Administration has opened all its facilities located outside of Zone A. All public hospital emergency rooms are open and will remain open throughout the storm. But also remember that some things have been sensibly closed. City school-based after-school programs are closed. Senior centers are closed. Public libraries are closed. All city parks have been closed since 5 p.m. and will remain closed until further notice. For your safety, now that we're experiencing dangerous winds, please stay out of the parks. Broadway is closed tonight. If you wanted to go out, it's probably and restaurants want the business and movie theaters and everybody else, but just remember it is dangerous out there. And it may be a good time to just stay hunkered into your home and have a sandwich out of the fridge and sit back and watch television. We have an effective plan in place, we think, and if we follow it and all exercise common sense, we're going to get through this storm just fine. So now let me say, number one, thank you to Chuck Schumer for the help that the federal government gives us. I was on a conference call with the president yesterday, and he had a bunch of governors and mayors offering any help that he could give us. Craig Fugate from FEMA the day before, and the governor's office and my office have talked today. I've talked to the governor a number of times during this. Everybody's helping everybody and working together, and that's the way it should be. Chuck, you want to say a few words?
Well, thank you, Mayor, and first let me thank you and your entire team for the great job you do. I've been burning up the phone lines with the federal agencies, and one of the things that they all repeat is they know the city of New York is capable, competent, and really able to handle these problems better than just about anyone else, and it gives them a sigh of relief. So thank you and everybody here for the good job they do. As everyone knows, yesterday FEMA approved an emergency pre-landfill declaration statewide. That simply includes what's called Category B money, emergency protective measures, direct assistance report, water, food, care kits, things like that, as well as sending the Army Corps in to sandbag wherever it's needed. Now, due to the magnitude of the storm, I'm certain we'll get a major disaster declaration, and we'll get it quickly, as soon as the state officially applies. But today I'm calling on FEMA to skip the preliminary assessment and provide an expedited disaster declaration. They've done that on occasion. There is no question we will meet the limits, the $26 million limit we will meet. And so to wait a week and calculate everything while everyone's waiting and hoping and thising and thatting doesn't make much sense. Now, once a major disaster declaration is made, the money's going to go to three different groups. I'm going to briefly describe each. One is public assistance. The mayor will be, he knows, he's glad to hear that. It's always been a tradition of the federal government to step in when disaster is there. There was a period of time a year ago where some folks didn't want to fund disaster assistance, but we've overcome that and the disaster assistance funds are full. The city, state, or any other public entity, the Port Authority, the MTA, will get 75% of eligible costs from the federal government for repairing or replacing public facilities. It falls into a whole bunch of categories. It's quite broad. It's quite generous. And during Irene, FEMA was very good at getting the money to the localities very quickly. It includes debris removal, emergency protect measures, road and bridge repairs damaged by the storm, water and sewer control facilities damaged by the storm, public buildings and content, public utilities repair, park and recreational repair. And they will also provide, and this is something that localities, I'm sure not the city of New York, but many neglect, they'll provide 70% for hazard mitigation projects. If there's a place that always floods and you want to build a seawall, they will pay for that, and that's very important, and it's often neglected. Second area is individual homeowners. If your home is hurt by the storm, you can get several types of assistance. If it's not livable, you can get temporary housing assistance for at least 2 months. You can get repair money if your home is damaged, although they make you put your insurance money for it first. So if you have $80,000 of damage and $60,000 is covered by insurance, FEMA will pay the other $20,000. There's replacement. Under rare conditions, homeowners receive funds to replace a damaged home that can't be moved into. And then other serious needs that you might be inconvenienced from the storm or not able to do, such as medical, dental, or funeral. And unemployment insurance if you're not covered federally, like you're a small homeowner, small business owner, and you lose that. The third category is small business. Loans for small businesses can be up to $2 million for losses, whether it's loss to the structure or let's say you have a supermarket and all the refrigeration goes and all the cold goods get ruined. They will reimburse you for that. And again, they've been pretty good at that. Two other indications, two other things. I've spoken to the Army Corps. They are aware with this type of storm, there may be dredging needs. The harbor may get silted up in various ways. We're particularly worried, frankly, about the Fire Island Inlet, which is the one outlet to Great South Bay, to the ocean. They have a load of dredging equipment here because they're dredging our deep new harbor so we can attract more ships. And they're willing to move that very quickly as well as get sand replenishment where it's needed done very quickly. FEMA itself has opened two emergency centers, one on Long Island, one upstate in Oneida County, where they're providing, they have on hand 56,000 ready-to-heat meals, 36,000 liters of water, and there's more food and water on the way. The cooperation, I think, between the federal government and the mayor has been excellent and hopefully will continue, and I'll keep an eye on it. Thanks, Mayor.
Senator Chuck Schumer speaking along with Mayor Bloomberg. And we go back now to Mayor Bloomberg as that news conference continues.
Facilities and helped us generally answering questions from their constituents. We've made a big point of reaching out to them and keeping them informed because they do get a lot of the questions that might otherwise go unanswered, and it's just in everybody's interest. And, Chris, you should know that they've really done a very good job, and thank you for all of them. Let me, before we take questions, just summarize for our Spanish-speaking audience. Las escuelas públicas están cerradas mañana martes. La ciudad está bajo un aviso de inundación costera y un aviso de vientos muy fuertes hoy y mañana. Esta tormenta es muy peligrosa. No salga a las calles, manténgase adentro de sus casas o un albergues donde están seguros y a salvo. With that, we'll be happy to take some questions, sir.
Mr. Mayor, any worries about seawater getting into the MTA, the subway system, and are there any
I don't think I haven't heard of any yet, but that's exactly why I thought Joe Loda did exactly the right thing. We don't want to go without mass transit, but what would be worse is if particularly the trains were damaged by being inundated, if they got trapped in a tunnel that flooded, or if they were in one of the yards that are low-lying. If that would happen, those trains could be out of commission for months. And we have to recover, no matter how difficult it is to go through Monday and Tuesday without mass transit. Wednesday and after that, we do need it, and I think they've made the right decisions. I haven't heard of any yet, but keep in mind, there's always flooding when you have a rainstorm. There's always accidents, water main breaks, and they are able to recover those. If you were to have a major one, then it would be another issue, but at least their equipment is safe. And incidentally, the MTA, if my recollection is correct, after Irene, got service back much faster than anybody thought they could.
I'm still confused. Are non-essential city workers required to go to work today? And
we asked everybody to go to work. We are here to serve the public. And if you can't get in, you can't get in. But we want everybody there. I know of no part of the city government where we're just wasting our money. We think there are all of these services that we're trying to provide are important. Once you get your work done, if you're not needed for the rest of the day, it's up to each commissioner. They can decide to let you go home early. Going home is not going to be easy. Some roads will be closed. The winds will be higher. We don't have mass transit. We understand that. That's just one of the things you have to learn to deal with. Life isn't always pleasant, but one of the things here is our city workers know we're here to help the public. And when the public needs help, we are going to be here.
We don't want to inconvenience anybody, but for example, sanitation workers and firefighters and police officers, their commissioners are, I would assume, not going to say, okay, you can go home. But there are some other agencies where once they've got done whatever's absolutely necessary and they can pick it up tomorrow or the next day, they'll do exactly that. Yes, miss.
We've been listening to Mayor Bloomberg with a live storm update. As he said, predictions are getting worse, if anything, for storm surges up to 12 feet, depending where you are at the peak of the storm tonight. And, of course, the very high winds. At last report, Sandy was strengthening in the Atlantic to 90-mile-an-hour sustained winds. The mayor again warned people to evacuate their homes in Zone A by the various bodies of water in the city. He said buses will only be running for another hour or so from the city's public housing projects that are located in those areas. So go, go, go. The mayor also suggested not taking the elevator if you live in any elevator building during the storm because you don't want to get stuck just in case the power goes out. And to the last questioner we took, he did not really answer the question about whether those city workers who are all required to report to work today will be charged a vacation day if they can't get to work, which had been a concern of some. Now, Governor Christie is scheduled for a news conference at 12:15. We will bring you that, too. Brian Lehrer on WNYC AM and FM New York and New Jersey Public Radio. Be safe, everybody. I will be joining Amy Eddings for our special coverage later tonight. Our coverage continues on The Leonard Lopate Show next after NPR News.